United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Well, so Canadians have no primary care physician. So getting a doctor to treat simple stuff like aches and pains, well, that can take anywhere from a few hours to several months.
I know that my customers, if they came in here and I expected them to sit for 3 hours and wait for a meal, it's not happening. They're not coming back. So why do they not have that choice when it comes to health care?
Because the Canadian system is a government monopoly. There are no alternatives. Several years ago, provincial governments, like the one in Ontario, decided to cut spending on health care. That led to the current shortage of doctors. It also led Norwood to shake things up. But little Norwood faces a big problem. The town's doctor may retire in the next few years. And if they fail to find a new doctor to take over, all those people who've already won the lottery, well, they'll be back at square one.
We are getting to the point where we're probably going to soon advertise again to our people that the lottery's open, and if you need a doctor, get your name in.
Mayor Percy isn't worried. He's betting Norwood will continue to hit the jackpot.
Adam Shapiro, Fox Business.
And I would do.
And hello, this is Sticks in for Tracy and Jeff today, and this is Tracy and Friends, WSOM 600 AM, 347-945-5229, the number here. Mark Mangi's in here with me.
Hey,
and
how
you doing
you
today?
Doing?
So you think that's coming to a coming to a town near you?
Coming to a town near you. I mean, I think we, you know, first of all, before we get into that, I want to say, you know, this is our last afternoon here.
Yes.
This is, you know, I don't know. Is
end of an
sad?
Era.
Is it sad?
Mm.
We're going from lunch to breakfast.
Yeah, it's end of an era.
How long has she been? How long has the show been on in the afternoon? Do you know?
I'm thinking, I don't know. I've been here 2 years.
Yeah, me too.
So I think she was here about 3 years before that.
Okay. Well, I hope that all the listeners are out there. You know, Tracy's going to be back on Monday.
Yes, Tracy will be back Monday.
And I think Jeff is coming in once he gets his car going.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got to get the car going.
Got car problems. You know how that works. You know, they got you. Once they put it on a rack, they got you.
Yeah. So I hope that all the listeners, make sure that you tune in on Monday.
That's right.
Monday morning at 9 o'clock. I'm not going to be here. I think you're going to be
yeah,
here
Yeah, I'll be here Monday.
Yeah, I'm
going to be
down.
It'll be Tracy and me and hopefully Jeff.
All right. Well, now I'll be listening, but I have to go out and do some work on Monday morning. From time to time, I have to do something.
Work.
Work.
What's
work,
that?
Work. You know what's good? You remember Dobie Gillis?
Yeah, I do. Reruns. Yeah.
Maynard G. Krebs.
Mm-hmm.
Would go, work. Work.
Yeah.
I did that. I was somebody was talking with some people, like their average age 25, and you
mm-hmm.
know, and I was like, work. You know, they kind of looked at me like I'm weird. They,
yeah.
What are you doing? I said, hey, Maynard G. Krebs from Dobie Gillis.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yep.
What?
That was Bob Denver.
That's Bob Denver. Yeah.
Before he was Gilligan.
Before he was.
he went from being one goofball to being another goofball.
Yeah. So what's going on, Sticks? Are we going to lose our doctors?
I'll tell you what. I mean, I'm afraid for the healthcare in this country. I was having a discussion on Facebook this morning, and this isn't a healthcare issue. This is a dollars and cents issue. Plain and simple. You know, just a simple dollars and cents issue.
Now, you better explain to the listeners what it was you were playing when you came
in. Yeah, what I was...
This is scary stuff.
What I was playing when they came on was a report from Adam Shapiro of Fox Business about a town in Toronto, Canada, in the province of Toronto, where in order to get access to a MD, a family doctor, you have to win a lottery because they only take four new people a year, and the waiting list is 5 years. I've heard the waiting list in Canada to see an oncologist is 6 months. So you go to your family doctor, if you're lucky enough to have a family doctor. He says, you got this. We need to have it looked at. So you get to wait 6 months before you go see an oncologist to see if maybe it's cancer.
the people.
That takes like what?
Well, it doesn't take long. I mean,
8 days in Ohio?
Down, yeah.
8 days in the United States?
Yeah. What the folks need to realize when you see what's going on up in Canada, you know, we are headed in that direction right now, and I don't think we're going to reach it because I think it's going to collapse before we get to that point. Sticks, I'm really hearing weird on this. Is this is my earphones strange? I don't know. This is what's sounding a little strange.
You want to check and see if maybe your volume's odd over on the right?
Which one, up or down? I don't know.
How's that?
How's that? That's a little bit better.
Yeah. That about, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay.
So I'm looking at this stuff, and you see this place in Canada. Now, you know, the population of Canada, folks,
is
35 million people.
That's 10% of what?
That's
the population of Ohio,
yeah,
or of the United States.
It's the size of California, population-wise. And this is what's happened in a country that is energy-rich, prosperous, strong middle class, and they can't go to the doctor.
Well, you and the people, the proponents of single payer, you only have to look at Belgium. In 1964, Belgium instituted a single payer socialized medical system, the wages of their doctors, so they immediately had a brain drain. All the doctors started going to the United States. You know what they did to them, Mark?
What they do?
They drafted them. Now, I'm sorry. I do not want the guy cutting on me drafted. If he's cutting on me, I want him to be there because he wants to be there.
So we're watching this stuff and we're listening to this stuff. We're seeing this stuff on TV, and it gets downright scary. I don't understand what it is that the attraction is. What is it that the people of the United States can't look north to see what's coming? You don't have to go very far. Now, I know some people from Canada, and I'll tell you, they look at me like, what are you afraid of? They kind of like their system up there to a degree. You like the system until you get sick, and then you got a problem. And so what the Canadians were doing is they were coming to the United States for more severe medical care, and you know that option's going to go. So what's going to happen? You know, if this continues the way it's going, I think you're going to see private insurance coming out of other countries, coming in here. Somewhere.
Well,
the rich are going to fly off to Mexico. They're going to set clinics up on the other side of the border down to Mexico.
Medical tourism is already starting to become a pretty big thing. You've got, I heard a story about a woman, I can't remember the whole thing, but some kind of an eye operation.
Yeah.
And it was like $150,000 in the United States to have this eye operation. And she went someplace else. Her church took up a donation for her, and her husband flew to this other country. And I can't remember what country it was. The surgery was like $35,000.
Sure.
And the reason it was so much cheaper all boiled down to regulation and that kind of thing.
Coming over here, I'm looking at some of the headlines today. There's been a lot of news on healthcare last night, and I'm looking at some of the headlines over here today. Doctor's office spends 2 hours on hold with health insurer for patient surgery authorization. You got patients walking out of hospitals without treatment. They don't know whether or not they have health care or not. The scariest thing I've seen on TV relating to this, really health care directly, but something I think we need to be concerned with as Americans. And did you see the letter that was signed by the Attorney General's?
I saw that. They're suing because they're saying that it's illegal by not enforcing the law as written. It's against the Constitution for the executive branch to do that.
A lot of these lawsuits you're going to see a lot of lawsuits being filed right now, and these lawsuits are going to be they couldn't be filed up until the first of the year because you have to be an aggrieved party in order to file a lawsuit. And these folks, you know, we didn't have any aggrieved parties until 2 days ago, so now we do. And I'm going to tell you what the president is doing. And the president of the United States right now has taken a law that has been passed by Congress and is deciding what he's going to enforce, what he's not going to enforce. All presidents do. But this guy's actually changing the law. He's afraid to go back to Congress. So he's doing this unilaterally. Well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And in effect, what he's asking the insurance companies and the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies to do is to violate the law.
Right.
And the attorney generals, you know, from the states that have issues relating to this sort of thing, have sent a letter to the president saying, you know what, guy, you can't do that. And I think the lawsuits are coming down the pike. It's going to give Justice Roberts a second bite at the apple on the constitutionality of what's going on, because the president can just change laws without going to Congress. We've got a problem because we cease to be a republic and a democracy and start to be a monarchy, King Obama.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this president has been legislating by executive fiat since he got there. And what he's done, though, is he's not only doing it with his own executive orders, he is instructing his regulatory people, the EPA, the DOE, the Interior Department, and all these people to put other things in place that are hurting business, they're hurting us. And it's just amazing what's going on. Well, did you see the article about the no bid contract for Medicare and Medicaid payments to that hospital in Houston?
No, what they do?
Well, here, I'll play it after the ad plays. I'll play it. We got a 30-second ad here that I'm not going to play.
I'm a little bit afraid. Sticks is sitting here at the console and. I'm watching his fingers. I don't know what the heck he's doing over here.
Yeah, we're under instruction. In the Navy, we call that under instruction.
Under instruction.
You know, watch one, do one, teach one. That's
radio
how they do.
Radio host and training.
That's
over
right.
Here.
That's right.
Is it going to go?
It's going to go.
It's
3,
gonna go.
2, 1.
Had to make it through the holidays without getting paid for weeks. CEO of St. Anthony's Hospital in Little York is blaming a new Medicare payment contractor for his payroll problem. Eyewitness News reporter Fosi Kalergis joins us live with more. Fosi?
Yeah, Eric, and nearly 150 employees, we're talking about doctors, nurses, even administrators, have not been paid here at St. Anthony's Hospital in nearly a month. The CEO is admitting to this and saying that he is not to blame. CEO Jason Ledé told me the person to blame is his Medicare payment facilitator. Ledé says he has about $3 million in Medicare receivables that have not been dispersed to him, so he has very little cash flow, and he's trying to catch up with his payroll problem. We talked to several employees here who did not want to go on camera. They said they are having trouble paying bills. Some had to get a second job while others are selling their possessions to stay afloat. Ledé said he hasn't collected a paycheck in a year and has given gas and grocery money out of his own pocket to help his employees. Here's a statement now from him. Ledé says, quote, "This is a national issue that affects us locally. We are adapting to the new ways of doing business that have been created. We think we can be successful in 2014 and take care of all of our employees through this transition," end quote. The Texas Medical Association says they are familiar with similar types of complaints against this Medicare payment facilitator. A representative there also told me that smaller community hospitals like this one here are pretty much in the same boat. Reporting live in Northeast Houston, Fosi Kalergis, 13 Eyewitness News.
Okay,
there we go.
I understand what they said over there. These people are not getting paid.
Right. And we got to go to break, and we'll talk about this as soon as we get back.
So I became a teacher.
Or toll-free 1-800-530-WSOM. Online at TracyAndFriends.com or 600WSOM.com. Now, here's Tracy.
Hey, welcome back to Tracy and Friends in the Afternoon. It's Sticks talking at you.
Hey, Sticks, how are you doing?
Good. The number to call in is 347-945-5229. And in the queue I have Matt. And I have either Blind Mike or South Carolina. I don't recognize the number because I don't sit on the side of the desk that often. So we, before we went to break, we ran this little clip about this no-bid contractor for Medicare and Medicaid that wasn't paying this hospital, so the hospital's not paying their people. So how, I mean, if private insurance is so bad, when was the last time you heard of a private insurance company not paying a hospital, Mark?
I have not heard of that. And you know what? This is just reaching the point when I'm watching this stuff on TV and I'm watching the people in Washington, it's almost becoming hysterically funny. I don't want to see anybody suffering. And I'll tell you what, all this guy has done is taken a bad situation and made it a lot worse. All of the issues that this fiasco had, that the complaints that they had relating to the medical system in the United States could have been addressed one by one. And, you know, when I put this at the door of both political parties,
oh, absolutely.
This is a Democratic issue. This is not a Republican issue because the Republicans had a chance and they didn't do anything. But what the Democratic Party has done and what Obama, instead of addressing the problems, he had an ideological agenda. And this, what he has now, it's not an issue of health care, folks. It's an issue of control.
And dollars
because
and cents.
The end of the day, I'm going to guarantee you that by the end of 2014, you're going to have, and as I understand, the figure that they were touting relating to the uninsured in the United States, the figure that these guys are blowing around was about 30 to 35 million.
Right.
In reality, it was probably 10 to 15 million.
Right.
Because you can't believe anything that comes out of their mouth, and you can't believe anything that you read in the press. I will guarantee you by the end of this year, you're going to have 40 to 50 million Americans uninsured, if not more. And we're going to have a big, big problem.
Well, I saw reports before we did this that said the average, prior to this, the average uninsured guy, the average uninsured family was a family, a young family, husband and wife, making about 70 grand a year that just plain figured they could take a chance on it. Because the very, very poor were on Medicaid, and everybody else had employer-paid health care.
Yeah.
So, you know, so anyways, what do you think, Matt? Okay.
Sorry about that.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
You know, it's the new year. I'm already having computer problems. How are you guys doing? Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Matt.
Enjoy me with computer problems. It has not been a good year so far.
Well, you know,
I don't understand this stuff. Everything goes kablooey. I I'm not exactly, my skill set on this stuff is, you know, slim to none. I press buttons and hope for the best.
Well, don't buy new because it doesn't get any better because this is a new computer for me that's still giving me problems. It's running like government health care for me. You know, it promised me one thing, it's delivering another. You know, the hypocrisy is unbelievable. When the government will use the same line to pass a law that it uses to inflict some type of problem with the private sector. Like, let me give you a for instance. I was in the vending industry years ago. And I know how hard it is and how small the income gap is for any company to make profit when it comes to that. So they just passed this new law that said vending machines now have to put a label on the machine itself. Even though these packaged materials have nutritional facts of calories and stuff, now these vending people have to, every time they change the product out, they have to change the labels on them, which means they have to spend more money on the labels and the whole deal. So they passed this law that says that they need to put these labels on the machines. What was the reason for it, the government said? Because people need to see what's in the machine before they buy it. It seems to me that a few years ago we had a Speaker of the House use the same line to pass health care. It's funny the hypocrisy when they're trying to push a certain agenda that they use the same lines to inflict damage on the private sector and use the same line to grow the government. It kills me.
I don't. You know, it's the hypocrisy of the thing that just is unbelievable. You know, first of all, they assume that everybody's stupid. Second of all, they assume that they know what's better for you than we do. And then they take the hubris of going forward and passing this stuff and exempting themselves from it because they don't want to have to deal with it themselves. They should be ashamed They should be ashamed in every sense of the word. And, you know, and I'm sorry, even news, and, you know, I watch a lot of television. I watch CNN. I watch NBC. Try to figure out what's going on to try to get all sides of the argument. Even these conservative shows aren't really spelling out the problem, that these are individual people who are suffering right now, and we have a guy who's surfing in Hawaii who really doesn't give a rat's you-know-what about anything. And we're sitting here paying the bill, and we're suffering. We're trying to figure out who's going to get what. Now, I'm covered through a teacher's pension fund through my wife right now because she was a teacher. And we don't have that problem yet, but I think it's going to come. I think the problem's going to come going into next year, and certainly some of the other organizations that I'm involved with that pay health care for folks, it's going to come there also. But these guys just keep going on and going, and they don't care. And I get so frustrated when I see these smarmy son of a guns on TV looking down their nose and laughing. You can see the smirk in their faces. You know, well, we got what we wanted. Well, you did, folks. 62% of the country doesn't like it, and now it's time for you to go. I think it's going to get steadily worse. I think it's going to reach the point of collapse, and my prediction has been, and I'm going to say it again, July 1st, Barack Obama will not be president. And I believe it, and
wow.
I keep saying it, and I tell it to everybody I talk to, because if this thing keeps going the way it's going, the Democrats have a problem. And right now they want to get Hillary elected president. And the only way they're going to do it is to get rid of the guy that's there and put distance between her and him.
Wow, that's a strong one, man. That's, you know, I don't know if they could get away with it. You know why?
By the way, I want to introduce Jeff to you,
thank you
over here.
Fine.
We're still having technical problems here. We keep plugging plugs into stuff. We don't know what's going to happen.
Jeff just pulled a Tracy move and fell out of the ceiling.
I fell out the ceiling. I finally found where the secret chute was, and I you know, because it was sure enough cold out there trying to find it all that time while these guys were in here holding it down and doing their thing.
I still haven't figured out why my mic's not up.
I'm hearing you.
Well, it's got to be. Let's see. Oh, don't worry about it. That's why you didn't have enough gain over here, really.
Okay. That's better.
Hey, yeah. Styx, how you doing? You look good on this side of the table.
A little more comfortable
we
on this
side of the
table.
We got the chief cook and bottle washer over here.
Yeah.
What are you eating there, Jeff?
How could we get – this is a Subway salad.
Wow.
I love Subway.
No, that looks good.
It is good.
What have they got in that?
Man, I have lettuce and spinach, chicken, and then, you know, all the vegetables because I like my tomatoes and – peppers and hot peppers as well and all of that stuff. I mean, I really make a good lunch salad.
Didn't know they had salads.
Subway. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way to go too. Because I mean, you're getting the same benefit of the guy that lost all the weight on there if you want. Because you're getting they should be advertised on it. What the heck?
I don't care. My wife asked me yesterday afternoon when I went home, she says, what did you guys talk about today? And I said, well, for the first hour, we talked about food and recipes.
Yeah. We got in touch with our feminine side. Yesterday.
Well, you know, the best chefs are men. I'm sorry. You know, men know how to cook.
That's true.
Yeah.
Do you cook, Jeff?
Yes, I do.
All right. What do you make? What's your specialty?
I can't tell you a specialty, but this is what I – well, stewed chicken is my specialty. I love stewed chicken, and so I make it a lot. But here's the thing I did. I've been trying to get this standing rib roast for the longest time, right? So I finally got one from Sam's Club.
Did you have to mortgage your house?
No, just a garage.
Okay.
And so I got that. I got that going, and I looked up on the internet a rub because I did everything. I didn't let my wife cook that meal. I cooked the Christmas meal, you know, right after Christmas. And man, I sat up there and I made the best standing prime rib I have ever tasted.
What'd you do?
I rubbed it with this rub that I got right off. It wasn't a Rachel Ray, but it was somebody. It might have been. It probably was a man that made this rub because it.
It's a man's rub.
And so, anyway, so I put it on there, And I let it sit for like about 3 hours. And then you bring the thing out, try to get it to close, you know, room temperature. Then I just put it, you know, you flash, cook it for at 450 for like 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Then you drop it down at 325 and you leave it in there for 2.5 hours.
Okay.
Man, that thing, my knife fell through it when I put it to it.
That, 325 was the...
Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No,
I was just going to say, that's exactly how I made mine, and mine turned out perfect, too. They had a recipe.
Oh, my God.
They had a recipe where you would crank your oven up to like 500 or a little over 500 for 25 minutes, and then you turn the oven completely off. And that is a great way to make it. The thing is, you have to have an oven that's trusty that holds in the heat. If you don't, it's never going to work. So the way you made it and the way I made it, it does work out great.
All right, 325 is the temperature you drop it to?
Yeah.
Okay, because I did a tenderloin and I dropped it down to the recipe said to drop it down to 225, but it just didn't work. I mean, I had to get that temperature up a little bit.
Like he's telling you like the truth. If your stove is not sound, because the stove I had last year, I could put something in there all day and it wasn't cooking right. I bought a stove about Easter time. And I'm going to tell you this. That stove, all it has to do is look at the food and it's done. I love my stove. And I love my refrigerator. All Frigidaire products I have in my house. And, oh, my God, this stuff is just fantastic.
All right. Do you use a recipe or do you cook by instinct?
It depends on what I'm cooking.
Okay.
Because when I cook steak, I cook. You know, I just do that. I know what to do. Go ahead.
Well, I always figured recipes are guidelines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not hard and fast rules. My wife thinks a recipe is a hard and fast rule.
So does mine. Yeah.
But, you know, that's just kind of a guideline, you know. You start with the recipe and you go from there.
We got an instinct. I look at it. I look at the recipe. My wife is cooking and she tastes it. And then I say, well, you know, you got to try this. Add this to it. Take that away. Mm-hmm. Put a little bit of this in there. Oh, my goodness. We did flank steak Christmas Eve. I cooked it out on the grill Christmas night.
Oh, yeah.
And I love flank steak. You know, it's a relatively inexpensive piece of meat, but I'll tell you what. That's got the best. I marinate mine in Italian dressing for about 24 hours in advance and throw it on the grill 3 or 4 minutes each side and eat it. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's true.
It's wonderful. You can eat it cold. I mean, you just chop it and eat it cold, and it's
try a brisket.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Now, when you do a brisket, do you roast it or
you can do it on the grill.
The same thing. It won't be too tough.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Well, you want to make sure you slow cook it.
Slow cook it.
You got to slow cook a brisket.
Yeah. You slow cook a brisket, it'll fall apart.
Okay.
It is so good if you do it right. So I mean that and I love, like I said, I love to cook.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't ever have time really to cook, you know.
Yeah.
But
crock pots. I do crock pot a lot.
Yeah, crock pot is good. I use crock pot. We're going to probably be making a little soup up here in a couple of weeks because our church goes on a fast, and we're probably going to do that. So
what kind of soup are you allowed to have on your fast?
Okay, now on your fast, it's in a couple of weeks because we're going on the fast coming up Monday.
Yeah.
The way some people do fast is they go into just eating one meal a day for a week, and then they'll go into just eating vegetables the next week, and then the third week you just do juices all week. And some people don't do any. Some people just go 3 to 5. I used to do 3 to 5 days in fasting of just drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asthmatic, so we just did water. Sometimes we would make up a juice to go through it, and you drink that, you know, as you went through the week. Mm-hmm. But that's a good way to clear your system out. You're looking at something. We'll be right back.
I'm Harper Keegan. Reagan with your headline news. The Youngstown man accused of beating and stabbing a mother of four kids will face a judge today in Columbus. U.S. Marshals arrested 39-year-old Larry Johnson in the city. He's a person of interest in the murder of 26-year-old LaShea Parker. Parker was killed inside of her Shelby Avenue home. Her body was discovered New Year's Eve. Today's court appearance is an extradition hearing, so Johnson could be brought back to the Valley to face charges, or he could try and fight the extradition. And the first winter storm in the new year has plows working around the clock. The snow continued to fall across the valley all day yesterday, and the salt didn't have much of an impact on the roads because temperatures dropped. Drivers were slipping and sliding, especially on side streets. A truck actually crashed into the front porch of a home on Summit Street Southwest yesterday afternoon. Parking bans remain in effect for several communities. More snow showers are expected today. For WSOM News, I'm Harper Keegan.
Ouch! My pants are on fire!
The solution? Cobbler's Corner, your fire safety headquarters. For working men and women, staying protected on the job is always first priority. At Cobbler's Corner, we have everything it takes to keep you safe. Red Wing, Timberland, and Carhartt safety toe and MetGuard boots. Wrangler fire-resistant shirts and pants are made with flame-resistant fabrics. Wrangler FR clothes are designed to self-extinguish, protecting you from burn injury on the job. Get the same Wrangler style and comfort you love and the protection you need. At Cobbler's Corner, we can protect you from head to toe. Protect yourself with Wrangler shirts and pants, Red Wing, Timberland, and Carhartt safety toe and MetGuard boots from Cobbler's Corner. Visit Cobbler's Corner on the corner of State Routes 14 and 46 in Columbiana, Ohio, and turn the ouch into ah.
This is an emergency message. Heavy incentives are falling, and a credit whiteout is in effect for Taylor Kia of Boardman.
That's right. Taylor Kia will white out your credit history.
Repo, foreclosure, back child support, medical debt.
Consider it. White it out.
We can get you approved and into a new vehicle. New 2014 Kia Soul as low as $169 a month, and you get Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, plus no payments until March. Taylor Kia wants to put you into a new vehicle before the end of the year, and we're willing to give you at least $4,000 for your trade. The credit whiteout is in effect, but it won't last long. Hurry in today and get credit approval only at Taylor Kia of Boardman, the better way to buy. All offers and approved credit must present current paycheck stubs, 6 references, phone bill, title to trade, valid driver's license, and utility bill. 2014 Kia Soul, 36-month lease, $19.99 at signing, plus tax, title, license, and dealer fees. Interest may accrue during the payment period. $4,000 trade allowance eligible on purchase of new 2014 Sorento. Excludes lease. Cannot be combined with other offers. See dealer for complete details. Offers end 1-6-2014.
1-800-530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
And we're back once again. Afternoon with Tracy and friends, 1-347-945-5229 and locally 330-781-9600 on WSOM 600 AM on your radio dial and on your iHeart radio dial. Check us out. Give us a call. We want to talk to you. And by the way, we're moving next week. We will be on at 9 a.m. Eastern time, and we will start the new year off on a brand new time for us, 9 to 12 daily. And I hope that many of you can come with us and hope to make some new friends as well. So we're just going to keep going with that. 843, you are in the air.
Hey, Jeff, Happy New Year to you.
Same to you, not so blind.
So, and Stick's there with you too. Happy New Year.
Hey,
much health
Happy
and
New
prosperity
Year, Mike.
This year. I'm doing great.
Amen. And Mark.
Watching the insanity of the news and all that lately and all. You know.
Oh, my God.
I guess somebody did something, some actress or something did something that was insulting to World War II veterans, and so it's all over the news today.
I haven't seen exactly what.
Here's what she said. She was. They were talking about the. I guess spaghetti or yeah, SpaghettiOs. I believe is who it was. God. Ran an ad honoring, to sell their product, honoring Pearl Harbor vets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, it was brought up at a New Year's celebration, and I forgot the actress's name. But she said that, what does it matter? It was something like this. This isn't word for word. What does it matter anyway? Those people couldn't even chew SpaghettiOs.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so it was really stupid.
Yeah.
You know, what do you, whatever.
yeah, okay. So it wasn't just a bash on the veterans. It was a bash on all elderly people, because that's who would still be alive. There's only 1 million left alive of the 15 million that served in World War II in active duty. Out of them, the average age today is 92 years old. And the oldest still living who served in World War II is 107. He was just honored this past Veterans Day. They brought him to the Arlington Cemetery National Memorial and gave him and honored him there. But he's 107 years old. And I believe he's an Ohio resident.
I don't know, but I saw him on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, that was... And they've been interviewing a lot of the veterans from World War II, and you know, God bless them and just their attitude from that generation. They think the kids today have it, who are serving active duty in places like Afghanistan, have it harder than they did. Can you imagine that? That's where their hearts are. They're thinking the kids today have it tougher, and the kids today, because I've seen some of those interviewed, some of the ones who've done several tours, feel that the old timers in World War II had it harder. Because they didn't have Skype and the internet where they could stay in touch with home. You were lucky if mail caught up to you. If you got assigned to a new unit or your unit got moved out or something, you know, the mail could be weeks with catching up to you, you know. And survivability rates because of battlefield emergency medical care and everything else was nowhere near the state of the art that it is today and stuff. And those guys, you know, today when they assign the veterans, and this is what one of the younger veterans said from the current wars, he said, we did one-year deployments. He said, back then, you were drafted. 8 weeks later, you were trained. You were somewhere on a front line somewhere 4 weeks after that, and you never knew when you were coming home. You were coming home either dead or when it was over.
Here was the exact quote. The name of the woman, she's a comedian named Natasha Leggero, and she quoted, "It sucks that the only survivors of Pearl Harbor are being mocked by the only food they can still chew."
Oof. That's cold. That's cold.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a disparaging mark. I mean, the elderly people of today, your baby boomers who were in their early 60s and all, are actually in better health than the people of her generation. Physically.
Yeah, you said that the other day, Mike, that the baby boomers will probably outlive their children.
Well, according to the actuarial tables that the insurance companies produce and everything else, yes, that we will be the first generation in history that will outlive at least one of their children.
God, that's
sad. I know, it's not the natural order that parents are supposed to be burying their children. And I mean, you have children as young as, when you look at CDC numbers and reports, Center of Disease Control, I mean, you've got 8-year-old children having heart attacks. And a heart attack prior to age 35 is less survivable than if you're 65 and have a heart attack. Because as the years go on, you develop ancillary blood flow around your heart. So you don't only have 3 main arteries servicing your heart. You develop many, many more as the years go on. And, I mean, that's really sad.
Is this because we've taken recess away from our kids?
You know, the kids today just don't have the physical fitness we had. I mean, you know, I was laughing because Bill O'Reilly said something a few days ago. He was talking about he was coaching one of his kids' softball games or Little League games, and they called the game because it was hot because there wasn't any air conditioning on the field or something silly like that. And I'm like, God, we used to play outside. We didn't care what the temperature was, hot or cold. You know, we were just outdoors.
But you know what? The climate of the way society is today leads to all this. You can put it all together like dominoes and watch mm-hmm. it fall. I mean, mm-hmm. it goes from taking the power of the parent or the power of the teacher away to tell the kid to have to do something
mm-hmm.
and because the kid might protest. Then you look into the gun issues when it comes to neighborhoods when we were kids, were able to go out and run around and play because criminals were scared that they could get shot by somebody if they, you know, perpetrated some crime.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's not the case. All of these things in society that you see being taken away and the rights being taken away from adults and parents and teachers, these are the reasons. And we still continue to push it. So, of course, our kids are going to do nothing but get fatter, lazier, be more prone to go into prison.
I'd like to disagree. I don't think any of those factors that you mentioned are more relevant or than the advent of the internet and video games.
I agree with that too.
Those are two things that keep kids inside, and the video games have replaced going out to go play.
Well, before the video games came into reality, we also started doing some other things. There, a general atmosphere, and this has been prevalent since about 1988 in our society, we have become very good on cocooning because anything you want can be brought to you to your house. You don't need to go out into the world and interact anymore. And our children are a victim of this cocooning trend that we have. And they don't have playmates and stuff. And a lot of the crime was less likely to happen back then, because we were out so much, everybody knew who the weird, strange people were. They weren't so isolated. And I'm talking to people here who were at least 55 years old and up. Think about it. We all know who the weird children were who had strange parents. We knew. We used to talk about them, you know. And also, you learned right away. You were more socialized at an earlier age, because if you went out on the street at 8 or 9 or 10 years old with a particular personality you thought you were going to experiment with, after you've been smacked down a few times and you had your butt kicked a few times, you say, well, that one doesn't work. Let me try another personality. And you got more socialized to what was acceptable and what was non-acceptable behavior.
And, you know, I agree with Beasley with the video games and such, and that is mm-hmm. a factor. That's a big factor, and you're right. As a parent, though, I can tell you that the other part of the factor is what I mentioned. I have my kids go out and play. But mm-hmm. if I'm not there to constantly supervise them, not supervise, watch them, mm-hmm. and make sure that there's no strange activity. I live in a pretty nice neighborhood, but we just had a drug-related shooting last year. Okay, mm-hmm. we have a lot of things going on, and my kids don't get out as much as I used to be able to get out when I was a kid because I have to work at some point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were pretty much, you know, I was a latchkey kid, and pretty much I knew the routine because the neighbors had rat me out. If I came home and they saw me outside with my school clothes still playing and stuff, they'd tell my mother when she got home. And so everybody was in everybody else's business. But then again, I grew up in the projects, and that's the way that was. But it was a community unto itself, and neighbors did have the right to discipline you and stuff without the fear of lawsuits.
You have to be a real lowly individual to rat out a blind kid.
Well, here's what I learned. I learned how to sneak out of the second story bedroom down the drain pipe, and anything I was going to do that I wasn't sure whether or not I should be seen, I did it in the dark.
Miserable do you have to be and say, oh, look, there goes the blind kid. He probably hasn't done his homework. I'm going to tell his mother on him and get him in trouble. Unbelievable.
I used to get blamed for stuff I didn't even do because I wasn't the one that was so apt to turn around and run as fast because it took me a little time to scope out where I was standing. And if
right,
I started running,
run
I was going to run into
in
a tree or a car, you know.
Thanks.
So I was always the last one standing there when everybody else, you know, kind of screwed out of there. And I was the last one standing there. And I go, well, let's blame him. You know, I one time got blamed for breaking and entering. Yeah, that was kind of funny.
How did you break and enter, man?
Because he thought it was his house.
Did you miscount the houses down the street?
No.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Oh, I've had so many.
But
I've had stuff like that happen to me. And, you know, when I saw the, you know, on the George Zimmerman thing, Jeff, you know, because I know we're still debating to this day, was this a black-white thing, you know? Was this racially motivated and all? I do know that I've had personal experiences where, like, I was standing on a street corner waiting for someone to pick me up. A car pulled up in front of me and stopped. I just assumed that was the person who was being sent to pick me up, who was a friend of a friend. I hopped in the car. It was some woman in the car. Now, she just simply said to me, you know, what the H are you doing, you know? And I realized, and I was so embarrassed, you know? Now, I honestly believe in that particular part of town where I was, had I been a black teenager, I'd have been shot. I really believe that to this
day. Might have been.
You know? Whereas, because I was, you know, a fairly clean-cut looking white guy, not too bright being blind, you know, and doing stupid stuff like hopping in the wrong car.
About what year was that?
That would have been 64, 65, somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah. 68, when they shot Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, we were across from the park. I lived near a park, and we rode our bikes through the park to the other side of the park, and which was a predominantly or all-white neighborhood. We didn't know that they had shot King at that particular moment or what was going on as a result of it. And, in fact, I think it might have been the day after, but these people sicked their dogs on us.
Uh-huh.
Sicked their dogs on us.
Yeah.
So I understand what you mean. A mistaken identity, but you wouldn't have gotten shot because, yeah, you would have. Because we didn't do anything.
Yeah.
We weren't coming to riot. We were trying to ride to the Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
And that's just unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, hey,
and that's,
what can you say?
Yeah. Well, you know, and to deny that these things are possible and, you know, and they do have a high statistical probability to play out the way you would run the scenarios, you know, or the stereotypes. Yeah, you can't deny that. You can't deny that. I mean, I think our country's done a lot better. I mean, the very fact, Jeff, that you're on the radio, being a man of color, and Beasley, you and I can have a civilized conversation where I don't get rebuffed from the white community because I'm even talking to you in public, and you guys
can
talk to me without fearing reprisals because how dare you talk to a white person. I mean, yes, and we can't deny it's come a long way in the last 50 years. You know,
well,
I mean, I could
be
in a public place today and have, in just about any state in the union, I could have lunch with Tracy, and nobody would think twice that a white guy was sitting out with a black lady having a meal.
No.
That
my father actually fought.
Years ago.
My father actually fought for the right for the black broadcasters to be able to go to school on the same scholarships that the white ones were in our area, and he won.
Yeah.
And we're about to go to our top of the hour news, though. So we're going to be saying so long here for a couple minutes. We hope everybody will.
Here?
Absolutely, I will do that.
Thank you. Thank you.
We will be back in just a few minutes.
Happy New Year, Beasley.
Happy New Year, Mike.
Happy New Year to all you guys. I wished them earlier a Happy New Year, but it's nice to see you guys call in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it's...
How are you guys making out with the weather?
It is cold here today in South Carolina. It is cold. I was just amazed because it's a raw, wet wind. We've had several days of rain, so even though it's high 30s right now, low 40s, the wind blowing because we're on the coastal plain is really raw. It cuts right through you.
That's cold. That's real cold for South Carolina.
Yeah.
How far are you from Charleston?
I'm about 130 miles north of Charleston. If you come up Interstate 95, where Interstate 20 coming in from Atlanta hits it, I'm 11 miles east of that junction.
I've been there a few times.
Hey, guys.
Grandmother's side of the family.
Yeah. Hey, Alec.
Hey, Alec.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys. It's I'm upset because it's 44 degrees here in Orlando, Florida.
That's cold.
Holy smokes. And they don't think Disney's dead. They don't think him and Elvis are hanging together somewhere. At 44 degrees, he's preserved.
That's 44 degrees in the middle of the day, so it must be getting into the high 20s overnight.
Well, guys, we're sitting at 4 degrees here right now, so And we're going to be looking at, I think Monday night is supposed to hit minus 12, and we're going to top out the next day on Tuesday at minus 2.
Yeah, I've got a friend up in Vermont. She's just a couple miles off the Canadian border, and she's up in the mountains, and she was saying that last night they were minus 15. That's without the wind, right. That's without the wind. That's straight up real temperature.
Yeah, that's where my brother, he's in Minnesota, is saying about the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And she's got frozen pipes, and because she lives in a manufactured double wide house on a slab, and I got to get up there this summer. I got to come up with a better system to keep her water from freezing than what they're doing, because it makes no sense what they're doing.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys. I think we reverse this global warming a little too much. Somebody better buy some cows to get out there and fart and warm this up a little bit.
Well, that's not going to happen, because according to the reports from the USDA, chicken surpassed beef in American consumption last year. We made more chicken per capita than we did beef.
Chicken's cheaper.
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying. It was the economy pushing it through. So, if Hillary gets in for 8 years as president, they'll be talking about how cockroaches pass chicken for human consumption because they're cheaper.
I would go vegan first. That sucks.
So, anyway, so any red-blooded American, you need to start raising a cow and feed him poorly and encourage him to flatulate to reverse this global cooling.
Feed him cabbage and beans.
There you go. I don't want to be serious today. Life's too good.
I joke around all the time, even in the most serious of situations.
It's the only way to get through it. It keeps you from screaming.
That's true.
Yeah. I just look at the economy and stuff, and, you know, I just
you know,
look at everything.
You know, it sucks. It sucks because with what I do, it's important that your average guy, it's important that he has, you know, $5,000 to $7,000 sitting around in his checking account, that when he hears an idea that sounds like it makes sense, that he's willing to give it a wink.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just important. It makes the difference.
Yeah, it does.
You know,
it
to
does.
Get it started, that he's willing to say, hey, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and give it a shot. And so the guy that does have, first off, there's a lot of people that don't have it.
Right.
That did have it. And
most people don't have $1,500 in the account, Brown.
Right. Well, right. Alabama. But the people that do have it are less willing to part with it or to give something a try.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't like that. I sold private placement programs for internet ventures in the late 90s. And it still wasn't easy to do. But people would give it a try.
Yeah.
Well, before things failed because of what the marketplace did. Okay, it was up to the marketplace, up to your success and failure. Now things are being mandated against these people. And to come up with an idea and try to push an idea forward, you already face a mountain of not uncertainty, of certain obstacles that you have to overcome. And who wants to do that? Who wants to do that when you got the marketplace after that too? So.
We have a little club of friends. There's about 8 of us all together, and we are entrepreneurs to our core. So if one of us finds something, we'll bring it to the others. We'll have a little telephone conference. We'll say, okay, here's something I just discovered. What do you think? And we'll hash it out amongst ourselves, and we'll go, yeah, okay. And we all have our tolerance for a certain amount of risk, and we'll all throw in a couple of shekels, and we'll just give it a try. And over the last 5-6 years, two-thirds of the things we tried didn't pan out, but the one-third that did more than made up for the losses and put us ahead of the game. So, you know, and
called venture capital.
Yeah, and that's what we do, and it's kind of fun because we're all of the same – we're cut from the same cloth. I love startup ventures. I love start. When something's going and there's big money in the checking account and everything else, I'm absolutely bored with those. I don't want to be a manager. I really
right.
love the startup, you know, the thrill of it all. Can you put it together and beat the odds? I love it.
Hey, quick, just real quick, when they go to mornings, when the show goes to mornings, are you guys also going to be able to call in?
Yeah, I'm selling my companies now so I can be free in the morning. No, I don't know. I was just thinking about that when Jeff was doing the announcement. I don't know how much I can participate because usually mornings are – that's when I'm the busiest. And if I work really hard till noon, I can usually free myself up between noon and 1 o'clock to be here. But I don't know.
Alabama?
Yeah.
You going to be able to make those calls in the morning?
No, I'm through. I'm starting a new project Monday. I'm going to be out of it for a while. At least for a few months anyway, so because I got some big stuff. This is going to be my year. I'm finna take over. That's just me.
Good afternoon with Tracy and friends. We're here talking to you about what's on our mind and what's on your mind. And we want to hear from you. So we're going to get right on it right now. Call up 334. You are next on, and you are in the air. What's going on, buddy?
What's up, man? This might be my last time calling for a while. I'm starting a new project Monday, I'm gonna be in Tuscaloosa. So.
Oh, great!
Yeah,
great
I'm
for
back
you,
in
man.
Alabama. Unfortunately, I'm back in Alabama. So.
Roll Tide.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They didn't want to roll yesterday.
Kids,
man.
Surprise.
It's hard to get kids up for a game. They ain't winning. They ain't going for the title. They don't want to play. That's how Ohio State need to look out tonight because they feel like they was right there. Nobody want to play. No, I know y'all don't want to play no Clemson. So those are games you got to look out for. So
I know that's right.
One loss away. And I feel like Auburn's been lucky, man. Auburn, I mean, Georgia had them. And for the ball to bounce off the guy's shoulder and land in the guy's hand and then they get a touch, they're lucky. I think they finna get drilled. Monday. They're going to get beat to sleep.
I doubt it. It takes a little luck, young man, to go ahead and win at this game.
I understand, but I'm saying I'm down here in Auburn. I'm in Montgomery. We're about 40, 50 miles away from Auburn. You ought to hear some of the way these people are talking. And I'm sitting like, man, I mean, if you barely got there, like if it was a ran back kick and a ball bounce here and there, you can't be running around here like you just destroying teams. Understood. And look, I hope Auburn win. I went to Tuskegee, like 15 minutes away. But no, I doubt it.
Auburn deserves a little luck. I remember the year that my team won it, the USC Trojans, and Auburn went undefeated that year, 2005.
It was cheap, yeah, with Reggie Bushnell.
So they deserve a little luck, and they had a tough year last year. And they weren't considered good. And
I think Auburn turned. They offered it to Auburn. Auburn turned it down, or something. They didn't want it. Something along those lines.
The way it was before the BCS. Well, it was during the BCS. They just didn't get it just didn't tabulate up there for them to play in the national championship game.
I think it's going to be good. I think we need to go to at least 8 teams in the playoff instead of 4. But at least they got something.
Yeah. Hey, what do you guys think about? Russia passing the law that it's illegal to be gay, and so many now gay athletes are coming out of the closet and volunteering to go to the Olympics as the officials for our Olympic teams. Have you seen that?
Oh, look, Russia's a free country. They can do what they want to do. We are not – the way we think, we cannot control that. That's their country.
Yeah.
Russia's not a free country. Russia is a sovereign country, which means right.
Yeah,
they have the right.
I mean, that's what I mean. It's free. I mean, sovereign. Yeah. Hold on one second.
Yeah, but the thing
got
Billie
Jean
King
is volunteering. We've got sodomy laws in the books here in the U.S. You know, we've got that they're not enforced. The only probably difference in Russia is they'll probably enforce them.
Yeah.
But you know, there's gay people everywhere. I mean,
yeah. Well, you remember the comedian Yakov Smirnoff? Remember
mm-hmm.
him? He was saying, well, one of the big misconceptions is that you don't have freedom of speech in the Soviet Union. And he said, that is not true. He said, it's you don't have freedom after you've made the speech.
Oh, God. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But you know what? You know what? Here it is. I'm watching as the president tries to spread his moral belief across the nation, across the world. And but I don't see him talking to any Arabic nations saying that same stuff.
Yeah, it's wrong to ignite women because you don't like them anymore and stuff and whatever they do.
Yeah, but you don't see any.
No president really has really been principled about any type of, you know, human rights behavior. Just this president, but no. They can't call it fair. They're politicians. But, you know, you're right about this president. No one calls out Saudi Arabia for their, you know, practices, which are repressive. We even prop governments up.
My point wasn't that. My point was that, you know, he's going to make everybody have to accept, you know, like I said, say it like this. Not so much for a woman homosexual, but for a man homosexual, I find that very reprehensible to me. I think that that's just filthy, okay, in my mind. That's what it is. Now, I don't hate them for doing it. That's what they do. I mean, that's what they believe in. That's what they feel is good and right, okay? But to me, it's reprehensible. I don't want to see you in my face letting me know every single doggone day that, you know, this is what you like to do. Because it makes me want to throw up. Now, that's me. That's me. I'm not dogging you for that. But I don't show my heterosexuality to you, and I don't say, if the whole world doesn't go with heterosexuality, we're not going to give USAID. That's what it's going to turn into one day. We're going to find that one going on. Does that make sense to you?
Well, what really
doesn't that sound stupid?
What really drives me nuts is when we're backing, when we sit here and we rail against people for speaking out their opinion about, let's just use the gay topic, about gays. We rail against them. They're horrible people. They should be shut down and shut up. But yet, these same people will, in an instant, defend Islam. Anybody who's Islamist, calling it a peaceful religion, and they'll defend their right to do anything. And this is a religion that says kill the gays. Okay, that's what bothers me.
Well, yeah, and that's wrong. You don't do that. You don't kill people because of an act like that they do. I mean, unless of course it's my child that you came after while he was young, then you are going to suffer that consequence. You know, because, you know, that's something that is way far past the pale for me. When you do something like that to a child, I think you do deserve death. Now, that's me again.
That guy didn't go to jail in Texas. You heard about that guy in Texas caught that guy raping his daughter in the barn. He beat him to death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he didn't go to jail.
Yeah, he shouldn't have gone to jail.
I'd have acquitted him in a minute.
Only three.
Well, you know, again, the hypocrisy, and it's not just about that. It's about, like, the new thing of the left with Phil Robinson is when he was talking about it's okay to marry 15, 16-year-old girls. Have you heard that?
I thought I saw something on that, but I thought the number he actually said was 20-year-old, and what he was saying was marry younger women, but he wasn't talking about old men 70 and 80 years old marrying young women. What he was talking about is get your life started sooner. Get a family going.
But,
get responsible.
But the story the left was trying to spin it as was that Phil Robinson was trying to say it's okay to marry a 15 or 16-year-old girl. But yet again, they'll spin around and support Islam, who has that in their traditions, even 12, 13-year-old girls, and they have no problem with that. So again, the hypocrisy.
Right. Well, Phil's going to throw him a real curve on the second episode of Duck Dynasty. He's becoming a Muslim. Then they're not going to know what to do with him.
Well, you got the beard for it, so you can go ahead with it.
Beasley, you're looking at people that look at things different than you do. My wife's grandmother was married at 14. And it was wasn't uncommon. That was more of a norm then.
I'm aware of that. But I'm also aware of Muslims that are peaceful people.
Yeah.
That go about their business. Not everyone's an extremist.
Right.
And there's also what's in the book, whether it be the Quran or the Bible, and then there's the reality of the way people practice their religion in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And even with Christians, how many people are practicing everything exactly by the book?
With Christianity, there's a lot of people that aren't schooled in the book and don't understand their own book.
And I'm sure it's that way with Muslims too. All right. Now, I mean, you've got a billion Muslims in the world, and if all of them were violent extremists, as the way that you guys are sounding, there would be a heck of a whole lot more trouble in the world.
Well, again, I'm not attacking the people. I'm not attacking the people at all. I'm attacking the religion and the texts that back
You're attacking a text. You're attacking a text, and you guys also pick and choose passages.
No, and you're
and
right.
Islam
is not under attack in this country. Christianity is.
Absolutely.
You don't have any
Christian czar, do you? No, but you got a freaking Sharia law czar. So what the hell is that? See, that's what I'm saying, Brown. It's backwards.
I just got to think of
there's something in this country that's called religious freedom.
No, there's not.
No, that's not religious freedom. He is supporting a religion by
there's
the government
something
right
in
your
country,
place, right in your
this
face by putting
was
a guy.
Founded, one of the principles this country was founded on is religious freedom.
Brown,
mm-hmm.
to have a Sharia
that's all
law.
I'm saying.
To have a Sharia law frickin' czar in place in your country for what?
Who is that? I don't even know that this is true. Who is this person?
Okay, well, I will look his name up for you
right now.
All
right. Have a Sharia law czar
in America, and to me, right
who
there.
It? Who is it? And when did it
hold
on,
I'm going to give you his name.
Go ahead. I'm not saying that there's not. I don't know.
Muhammad,
that that's true.
Muhammad Majid.
Now is he a Sharia law czar?
Sharia czar.
Right.
And
that's his
appointed?
Position and title.
Do you think?
But he's making over $175,000 a year, which is what one of the czars makes.
Is his title Sharia law czar? Are you
Sharia
afraid that he's gonna...
law czar? Did you hear me? Google
that's
it.
That's his title, Jeff. Are you sure about
title.
That?
Title. Looking at it. Title.
What's your source?
And who was he appointed by?
President Obama.
And when was it done?
Hold on. Hold on. Let me do that because I have.
Check your source. I just.
I'm looking at all the sources. Hold on.
Well, he's looking that up. The head there of North Korea, who had his uncle executed, New York Times is running an article of a rumor that they believe is true. He had his uncle executed by putting him into a pen with 120 dogs that ate him to death.
Mm-hmm.
That's a story they're running.
Oh yeah. So our universities will have him on a speaking tour next week.
Yeah, we can hear him.
Dennis Rodman sure will go back there now to talk to him about, you know, the cruelty that was that dogs shouldn't make dogs hungry like that. you get involved in this, you know?
It's divine retribution. Serves him right for all the dogs he ate.
You know, I have a friend of mine who's really not mentally balanced. He says PETA stands for people eating tasty animals.
People eating tasty animals.
The animal. That's what PETA stands for, he says.
Do you want to know one of the most impressive things I've seen President Obama do since he's been elected?
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, truly amazing. Remember the time he was in the little interview and there was a fly flying and he caught the fly with his hand?
Yeah.
Do you know how hard that is to do? And Peter complained about it, by the way. I'm like, now that's impressive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He caught the fly with his hand.
Yeah, well, that's because Mr. Miyagi had passed away. Remember, he could catch him with chopsticks.
Yeah, he sure could.
Remember that? In the Karate
mm-hmm.
Kid, he was catching flies with
chopsticks. But Peter actually came out and said that he was wrong for catching that fly.
Yep, yep.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure that this person is a Sharia law, that he's trying to impose Sharia law, that that's his intention.
He's to oversee the fair treatment of Sharia law, because there are some political movements in the country in predominantly high demographic Muslim areas in the country where they want to be able to have a court system separate from our court system where the devout can bring their...
No time now. I'm cleaning the fish tank.
Sorry about that.
You can always come up...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
And that is not unique to the Muslims, by the way. There are such courts for the Orthodox Jews, and there are such courts for the Christians and Catholics and everybody else, where you can, like, if you really believe that your marriage is a church matter, a religious ceremony,
right.
If you want to get divorced, you go to that kind of a court to arbitrate the divorce or whatever, and you would sit down in front of a panel of religious people, and
right.
There are places in this country where these kind of ecclesiastic courts are accepted. So this is not unique to the Muslims. It's just that, you know, we're all Muslim sensitive right now because of recent events in the last 10, 12 years. So we're sensitive to this. But these kind of religious courts that hold superiority to the jurisdiction of the civil courts is well established law in this country.
724, you're in the air.
I ran into hey Jeff, how's it going?
Hold on, Larry. Yeah, hold on, Sal. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, I think it was Brown. I was, I'm on my way back from Columbus, Jeff, and I thought I heard Brown talking about religious freedom, and I get that. But then on the backside, he will deny the Catholics their religious freedom to practice their faith, and one of the basic tenets of Catholicism is their belief that, in contraceptives. But the Obamacare, or I'm sorry, the Affordable Care Act, or the Unaffordable Care Act, however you want to call it, mandates that these guys go against their religion. Universities like Georgetown or Franciscan University down in Steubenville have to go against their religious beliefs and provide contraceptive to the employees and the students.
I'm not denying anybody their religious freedoms. I don't, you know what? I'm respectful.
You support, you support Obamacare.
Who says I support Obamacare? I haven't even signed up. I don't support anything. I'm anti everything. I'm not anti everything, but I don't necessarily support Obamacare. I might just say some things that oppose the people that are against everything so much, but I don't necessarily support Obamacare. I'm not diva.
You just said that you were one of the guys in that you're going to do that. You just said that you're against everything, but you'll say
well,
things against
I'm
people
saying,
that
I'm
against
saying
everything.
That as a joke. I'm saying that as a joke, but I haven't even signed up for Obamacare yet, and I'm a self-employed 51-year-old man who would probably benefit by signing up, and I haven't done so yet, and I'll probably wait until the very end. But so I'm not I'm ambivalent about it.
Jeff, I distinctly remember this man when we were talking about it was trumpeting not only Obamacare but what's ultimately the end game in Obamacare, which is single payer.
Universal. I don't know that I've ever trumpeted that. I haven't. I'm up in the air. I'm so confused. I'm still learning about it. So, and as far as Catholics, again, we have a situation. I know lots of Catholics, okay? As far as people practicing what the edicts of the church is saying one thing, and people are living their lives a different way.
Yeah, but that's between that person and the church. It shouldn't have a government in the middle saying to the church, no, we're not going with what you're doing. If you want to have this university, you got to break against your basic tenet. Now, if Catholic, this new pope seems like he's a little bit more progressive, if they decide to change that and go a bit, that's between Catholics, not the government.
I get your point. I understand your point. I understand your point where that infringes on religious freedom a bit. I get your point, but I haven't been waving the flag for the Affordable Care Act.
Hold on, 330. Bring you in right after these guys get finished here.
Yeah, I'm done, Jeff.
Okay, that's good. Yes.
Hey, Jeff, I just want to say something real quick about what they were talking about. You know, in case you guys didn't know, Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor gave a temporary exemption to Catholic churches for the ACA. So,
yes, you sure did.
So it's not even. I mean, I don't think it's worth arguing about that part of the ACA, at least at this time. But you know, really about the rest of it, we need to try and get the whole thing repealed or something. But the whole religious thing,
Alex,
with the Catholics, it's not worth arguing right now because they have an exemption for the time being.
Here's the thing about that. That's a legal way of doing things. That's a legal way by imposing an injunction on that portion of the law. Then, you know, it has all legal standing. However, what the president is doing has no legal standing, period. You cannot take a law and pick apart pieces of it and not enforce it. Remember when President Reagan wanted the Congress to give him a line item veto power, and they told him no, they wouldn't do it? What President Obama is doing is exactly what Ronald Reagan wanted. Wanted the power to give a line out of veto. They wouldn't do it. But he's doing it.
He is doing it. He is doing it. Oh, they're questioning the attorney. Several attorney generals today filed suit against him for that.
Did they actually file a lawsuit?
They couldn't do it until they were a disparaged group.
Yeah.
And after January 1st, they are now a disparaged group. So now they filed the charge.
And I want to make a comment here. The most dangerous part, on top of everything else with this Affordable Care Act, is exactly the thing we're talking about right now, because it goes to rule of law. You can't have a president of the United States, and I think we talked a little bit about this earlier, but it's up to him to enforce the laws. And throughout our history, the presidents have enforced some and looked the other way on others.
Right.
But what this guy's doing is changing it. And he's changing it and changing the rules and changing the law without the consent of Congress. If this is the president that we're going to have with this guy, we are in big, big trouble. Because our democracy is going down the toilet, and what in effect you have is a king who's going to change the rules to suit whatever he thinks they ought to be at whatever time.
I think that's a stretch, Mark. He's trying. You know what it looks like? That they're running into problems, and he's trying to get this thing implemented, and he's being flexible. And
he can't be flexible.
You can't be flexible with the law. And listen.
What are you talking about? You can't be flexible with the law. There's all types of laws on the books that aren't enforced.
There's laws
that are enforced selectively, okay? Arbitrarily.
Is there a provision in the law that states that he can lift the individual mandate or delay the employer mandate? Is it written into the law?
Can I comment on that? But he's obviously showing you, and he's playing wild and loose with it. He's doing that, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me because it's more practical for him or anything to try to get this thing implemented. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Actually, it is wrong. I'm just not as alarmed by it.
If you could do it with this,
it's a brand new law. You know, it's a brand new law that's changing everything.
Let me ask you a question. All right, here's the question.
Sure.
The Congress passes a law that says if you want to get federal assistance, all states have to put the speed limit of the cars down to 55 on interstate highways. Now, how would you feel if the president all of a sudden starts saying, okay, you know what, Minnesota, you voted for us, and, you know, your roads are a little bit different, so I'm going to give you an exemption and allow you to raise your speed limits up to 65.
Texas, I don't like what you've done.
You're going to be going 40.
Well, that's what he's doing. I hate analogies.
This is what he's doing.
I hate analogies, but let's just take the one that you used, okay? Here where I am in California, the speed limit is 65. Out there on the freeway, people regularly drive over 65, okay? Now, you slow down when you see the cops, but what the practice is, the standard practice is that kind of almost everybody knows, and it's probably the same in a lot of places where you guys are, that there's some leeway. That if you're going 70, 72, 70, if you're not going 10 miles over the speed limit, they're really not going to mess with you.
You totally missed the point.
We're not talking about selective enforcement. I'm talking about changing the law from the White House. Everybody knows how it works. It's a law that's not even implemented yet.
It's a law he's making adjustments. It's
a law
that's not even implemented yet. You guys are all over him for anything that he does. And I'm not defending him,
but it gets to be overbearing. Brown.
You cannot have the president changing laws passed by Congress arbitrarily. Selective enforcement's a different matter. I'm talking about taking the base of the law and saying, I don't like what they passed, so I'm going to change it to read this. This was his law. He wanted it. He got it. His people passed it, and they shoved it down our throats, paying off senators from states, changing the rules of operation in the House and the Senate, and passing it on Christmas Eve when nobody was watching. This guy's a snake in the grass, and if you let him get away with this, he's going to start doing it with other stuff, too. And you wait till he comes and he tells you what you can do and what you can't do. I'm not going to go foot to foot with my heart and hand begging for an exemption from the President of the United States. Who the heck does he think he is?
It's the same office that has the power to declare undeclared wars and have military action
Totally different.
There's provision made for him to do that in the law. The office, what power is that, my friend?
Where do you end the power, Beasley? Where do you end it? Tell me where you draw the line. Do you draw the line on income tax rates and all of a sudden, oh, you know what, this I don't like this income tax rate, I'm going to do this. Do you draw the line on how much energy? I think everybody should keep their houses at 65 degrees. So many analogies.
I promise not to.
Because
I'm
a lawyer, Beasley. That's how it works, sir. That's exactly what you do.
Analogies never address the problem that's being discussed.
Beasley, I'm going to give you a real world situation. CFLs versus incandescent bulbs. The president wants CFLs. However, he says CFLs use less energy, but they're more dangerous to the environment.
More expensive, that's for sure.
Yeah.
They are. You're supposed to call your hazmat.
$9 light bulbs. I just wanted to get 4 white bulbs for like $2 or $3.
It's like Jeff says, you got to get a hazmat crew in there. If you break one, because there's a lot of mercury in these things.
And they'll tell you that. And if you don't do it, or you put that in your trash can, and somebody sees it, you will be fined. See, that's the thing.
Hey, listen, Bill just made a good joke.
I had to implement a policy on how my complex was going to dispose of CFLs.
Right.
Hey, does the fact that you have CFL bulbs, will that affect your insurance rates for health insurance? I bet you see that one coming.
It could.
Well, this thing, what's happened with the Affordable Care Act has become almost a circus. This guy is shooting from the hip and making changes as we go along. It can't work this way. This arbitrary granting of exemptions to his friends and the people that he cares about, while the rest of us are left out twisting in the wind. I'll tell you what. The Supreme Court allowed the constitutionality of this act when Justice Roberts said it was a tax. When this stuff gets up in front of the Supreme Court with what he's doing, it's going to be blown away because you either going to enforce it the way it
then
was
you
written.
Should be okay.
I mean, but
then don't be so angry.
In the meantime, how many people have to get sick and die without insurance?
Look at the attitude of this president. Look at the attitude of this president. Look at the laws that he's picking and choosing whether he wants
to
enforce.
God, all presidents do this. All presidents.
No, they don't. Like
name
this,
me
Brown.
One law that President Bush chose not to enforce.
How about the Fourth Amendment?
The Fourth Amendment is null and void with the Patriot Act and the NDAA. That was done, as far as I'm concerned, an illegal act of Congress with the Patriot Act.
Right.
The Fourth Amendment violations. I'm talking about a law that Congress passed that he said I'm just not going to enforce it.
Yeah, but under
like the
under
Defense
the
of Marriage Act.
Under the
which
Patriot
this president
Act, though,
has said I'm not going to enforce.
Under the Patriot Act though, Bush issued executive orders which to basically further that encroachment, though, of the Patriot
right.
Act.
I'm not disagreeing, but I wonder, hold on, I agree with you 100% on that.
Right.
We never should have given the Patriot Act to start with. I'm not going to argue that point at all. But what I'm saying is this president has come right out and said, I'm going to pick and choose which laws I am going to enforce in their entirety. I'm not going to tweak on them. I'm going to pick and choose which laws I think need enforced.
And you know why I feel the right loses credibility? Just because of what Alex said. Because
I'm not defending George Bush.
I'm not defending Barack Obama, okay? I'm not. But you have to call the game fair. And if we could rewind the clock, to 10 years ago, I wonder how many of you were speaking out as strongly as you are now against this act of Biden. I wonder how many of you were, including the lawyer, I wonder how many of you were speaking out as strongly against these egregious acts by Bush. It's all bad.
No, I'm
going to
answer that for you,
please. But when you don't call, but I really wonder how many of you were speaking out against exactly what Alex mentioned. The executive orders, which is the exact same thing, the president playing wild and loose with the law and pushing his weight around.
Mark,
it's the same thing.
An executive order to change something like stem cells or stem cell research is one thing. An executive order to change an act, a health care act, is something totally different. Something that
to change a health care act that's a brand new law as compared to a president circumventing the Constitution and your civil liberties, and you weren't up in arms about that.
It's the rule of law. You cannot do this.
Let me ask you, Brown. We abandoned the rule of law. We abandoned the rule of law decades ago, to be honest. And every president has been guilty of it since.
I'm saying.
Yeah. Teddy Roosevelt was probably the first guy to really start abandoning the rule of law and having an imperial presidency.
But what we've got here is beyond the pale. Here is a law that he wanted, that he passed in the stealth of night, that he bent the rules for in the House and Senate to get done, that he bribed senators to get it done.
That we had to pass to find out what was in it.
They didn't know what was in it, and now he's going to
Where
come through.
Where were you 10
and like,
years
like,
ago, and how come you're
and
not railing against the Patriot Act now that violates your rights that are protected by the Constitution, which is 200 years which
wait,
is
wait,
over
wait,
200
wait,
years
wait,
old,
what
you're railing against this new law, that's where you lose credibility.
The same people that were railing against the Patriot Act then, are they railing against it now? Why don't they repeal it? Maybe because they're using it to their advantage. Ask the NSA about that one.
When the Patriot Act, let's go back to what was going on when the Patriot Act was passed 10, 11 years ago.
You're
when we just had the country
it. You're dishonest.
No, I'm not defending it. I was lied to because I was for it when it was passed because I'm looking at what these people told me what was in it and what it was supposed to do. And it has not lived up to that, and it has been a disaster. It has gone way beyond what they said it was supposed to do, and right now I hope to God they blow it up because I don't like it.
As a matter of fact,
one more thing, because I'll tell you what, this is not a discussion about the Patriot Act, and this is not a discussion.
But you know
about,
what? It's all related.
This
it's all related to the principle of a president
Obama.
Taking these extra powers.
I don't want him telling me I have to buy something that Styx doesn't have to because he's got an exemption and I don't.
So
that's
you're madder about that than
my money.
Then the fact that you can be detained and held without charges, that they can come and search your home and your papers without a warrant, that they can break into your house while you're not there and search it and never tell you?
The detainment without being charged.
Brown, worse than that in America.
The point I'm trying to make, though, guys, is that it's almost nobody can grow as an individual and learn and change on their views. It's almost like you got to have the same view for the last 60 years, when you were back 12 years ago, what were you thinking? Well, maybe they weren't thinking like that 12 years ago.
Well,
even still, that doesn't mean that people can't grow and change and say, you know what, this is not what they said it was. This is what it is. I don't like it. It's against the Constitution, and it's wrong. Because, Brown, I'm sure 30 years ago, you weren't as wise as you are now, right? So give people some sort of credit. At least they are against it now.
And I don't recall anybody on this show cheerleading for George Bush in any way, shape, or form.
Hello?
No, not at all. And I'm thinking reasonability on it. When I was for the law being passed, because I'm saying, here it is, just like Mark just said, we had two buildings blown up in New York, our Pentagon attacked, and whatever else would have gotten in the way if the other planes had gotten to where they were supposed to go. This was just too much. So, you know, we better let this happen because of that. And then you find out later that they're bastardizing their own law, and then you have Barack Obama saying how terrible the law is, and then when he gets in there, he puts it on steroids.
And
that's
incidentally,
the point.
There is one thing that Beasley also mentioned. He said the detainment without being charged, that just passed 2 years ago. That wasn't George Bush.
That was not George Bush. That was the steroids.
Well, hold on.
Yeah, but
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They stealthily built up that bill here in the time of Barack Obama. So they made it much worse.
To me, it doesn't make any difference where the tyranny comes from. Okay.
We got to go. We'll be right back.
Begin with your headline news. The Youngstown man.
You can't say I don't make this crap exciting.
No. Have you noticed, Beasley? I haven't said anything for 10 minutes. You know why? I'm sitting here with a homemade bowl of strawberry Jell-O with homemade whipped cream on it. I really don't give a damn about anything else.
you got to enjoy the simple pleasures, because if you think about this stuff all the time,
exactly.
When I hear the outrage in Mark's voice,
yeah,
about the Affordable Care Act,
yeah,
and he won't mention anything about the Patriot Act,
yeah,
and all I'm saying, to me, Obama
is just Bush with the tan.
Yeah, yeah. And here's and here's my total lack of understanding of all of this. Here's what I don't get at all about this argument on both sides. If this is really so unconstitutional, what he's doing with the House of Representatives being primarily opposition party, why has nobody brought a motion to impeach him?
I'm surprised that they haven't.
Because he's black.
Not because
he's
black, believe me.
Yes, it is.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you can't go near that guy. You can't impeach him. You can't do that. That's racist.
The weakest argument in the world.
But that's the argument they give. I'm not making his argument. I'm just saying you what you're going to hear.
This guy gets attacked and maligned probably a little more than all presidents. They get characters
really.
Drawn of them. They get fun made of them. That's been going on.
Not really. It's the same with Bush. Go ahead.
They have Bush as a monkey, so don't even try it.
And in fact, they made songs and movies about killing him. But you do that for Barack Obama, see what happened to you.
Yeah.
They've done it. They were doing it a lot. You know,
if you want to go back and look at the newspapers back in the day and the satire that they were doing, politics has been bad in America for centuries.
Not bad. That's part of freedom of speech. That's been allowed.
Exactly. When I say bad, I mean people with hatred and vitriol towards each to opposing parties.
It's not like all of a sudden, because he's black,
here comes the racist.
Well,
this guy is,
let me,
you can't just make people pay for stuff unconstitutionally, and then when they say something, call them racist.
The difference there, Alabama, is that this president is a person of color, and there have been attacks that have alluded and pointed to his race. There have been attacks. Now,
when you say attacks, some guy standing out in front of the White House with a Confederate flag with a gun
is an attack, but I'm talking about legitimate, real attacks, not some fool. Go ahead.
I'm talking about legitimate mainstream attacks on his race. I just don't see it as much as people try to say.
What difference does it make because of that, his mediocrity is giving a pass.
On
our mind and about you and what's on your mind. And but you know what? There's all types of things going on, and we're talking about pretty much this is a time we've never seen before in our history that. We have an abuse of power so widespread. You got the guy asking for clemency or whatever overseas that's leaking all our information.
I've seen Peter King is agreeing with that now.
Which really kind of
confused me.
Yeah, Peter King has taken some positions I don't agree with here lately, and I usually am with him 100%.
Well, you know, it's real easy for those of us. The positions he took on the spying thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's real easy for those of us not sitting in New York City to say, yeah, we don't need to be spying on our own people.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking at it from a different set of eyes than we are.
Right.
And I don't know if I'd be looking at it through the same set of eyes if I was actually there or not.
What do you mean by that?
I have to admit that. Personally, I don't think the government's got no business spying on anybody without a warrant, period.
Not American citizens.
Well, yeah,
like that.
American citizens.
And that's the problem there because, you know.
Now
with
what
that,
did
with
Al
that
Al
in mind, aren't
Lockie,
you glad Snowden revealed all of this?
Yeah, Al Alawi, uh-huh.
He was outside of the United States on what could be considered a foreign battlefield.
Right.
And that's a different set of circumstances.
Absolutely.
Than doing something to somebody here sitting in his front room in the United States of America.
Yeah, this is going to be something because we've been turned totally upside down when it comes to standards in our nation and in our society. Our societal standards have now been knocked out of place, and because they have, you have a wild country. You have a berserk nation. That's how I can put it, berserk. And people are running amok. People are doing crazy things.
if you look at it, even though Canada is not our nation, it's right next to us, you got a crackhead mayor. When did you ever think you'd have that? Okay. And then you have cities in America going bankrupt. Detroit goes bankrupt, run by liberal policies. Chicago is on its way out, and plus the people there are really ticked because they're sitting in there trying to hold on to their neighborhood schools and things, and they're not getting anything for their investment in Rahm Emanuel. I'm kind of glad they're getting what they're getting. You know, I'm kind of glad because they supported this BS in the first place, and now that they're you know, eating the fruits of it, they don't like the taste of the fruit.
People in New York just voted for
him. Oh yeah, they're just that idiot.
Yeah,
there's another one.
I really hope that he turns New York into Detroit in 4 years instead of the 50 years it took to do it to Detroit.
Well, it's close enough, so it can. It just happens to be our.
Hey, did you know New York was a plantation?
Yes.
I didn't know that
and
until yesterday.
This plantation
named
New York. This is what it is. You idiot. You are in the plantation. Then why aren't you changing your plantation? And why are you still supporting the same masses of that plantation if it's a plantation? See, this is the idiotic. You know, here it is. When they were complaining in Chicago about what Rahm Emanuel did, this ignorant person in the audience got up and said, they got people, that Tea Party, they're acting like the Tea Party in Chicago. The Tea Party ain't done nothing to your ignorant behind, okay? your behind is ignorant, and, you know, the Tea Party ain't had nothing to do with it. So I can't believe this stuff that I hear coming out of people's mouths when they complain about their state. And then they complain as if it's the other side of things. In other words, they hating Rahm Emanuel and the aldermen in the city. But guess what? They're Democrats, and you voted for them all. So you deserve what you get. You listen to them. You believe them when they tell you about their give me policies. And found out it came with a price. Now, didn't it? Call me, 330-781-9600. You disagree with me. 1-347-945-5229.
I disagree with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Alabama.
You already all know, but go ahead.
All right. This is what I'm going to say right here. I think it's better to redistribute the wealth to the people through the government. I think the government is not greedy. I think the government is the best person or entity to figure out how to redistribute the wealth of the evil rich people. I'm just being honest. I'm just keeping it 100, which
has Diva taken over Alabama's body?
I'm just saying. I'm gonna tell you why.
Where
I'm gonna tell you
Diva?
Why I feel this way.
Where is
I'm gonna
Diva?
Tell you why I feel this way. I'm gonna tell
person?
You why I feel this way. I'm gonna buttress my point, if you will.
Okay.
If you look at it, if you really look at it, wealth was made. Everybody that has money got it by doing something evil to get it.
Not everybody,
so,
but.
Taking the money, hold on, Brown.
Go ahead.
So taking the money from the wealthy is the right thing to do because we all know the poor and middle class, we ain't greedy. We don't want to take stuff from others. We just want free stuff, and we think the government should pay for it. I wouldn't even say free. I mean, look, I'm going to tell you like this. I'll go to work and give up 100% of my check. I need my check. I need my savings and stuff. I got stuff I want to do. But wealthy people should give up 95% of their wealth. They don't need it. All they should be able to take home is $200,000 a year. What do they need above that? What human being needs to take home more than $200,000?
Right.
They're selfish.
I agree.
I don't agree. I don't really agree there. But But
even in California, Brown, even out there with you,
the plantation, you have a big disparity of wealth. You do, and all you have to do is go to New York to see it, and ride from the South Bronx and ride all the way down. Once you cross 92nd Street in Manhattan, it goes from black and white to color. It seems like it's dull, gray, and drab uptown. As soon as you cross 92nd Street, it seems like everything comes into technicolor. And there's a big disparity of wealth. I don't
Why?
Know how this... Why?
Yeah.
There's so many reasons. There's so many reasons. But it's not all because some people didn't apply themselves and other people did.
Okay.
It's a variety of reasons, and there's so many reasons I could probably count them for the next hour and
well,
a half.
Here, I'm gonna tell you. Go ahead.
I think there's two main reasons for that, and that would be the two Tea Party rallies that they had in New York.
Yeah.
Go ahead. It's got to be. George Bush went through New York one time, you know.
Oh, well, you just sealed it.
So
no.
you know that was it.
He's one example of generational wealth and privilege.
Okay.
Sure.
And
through a different system, so is Barack Obama.
Absolutely.
In fact, so is everyone
know.
Who...
I don't know how wealthy his folks are, but I'm sure it doesn't compare to the wealth and the connections that the Bush family has.
Oh, absolutely. If you look at the genealogy, if you look at the genealogy of the people around him and around his grandparents, absolutely, it was a left-sided privilege instead of a right-sided privilege. Absolutely.
And I
will admit it. It's been everyone except Ronald Reagan wasn't part of that. Lyndon Johnson wasn't part of that.
Hubert Humphrey.
But the
I'm
majority of
right.
these guys are all through the same Ivy League system.
Yeah.
And here's the...
What?
Truman didn't go to college, so he was
No, Truman didn't go to college.
And understand something. Barack Obama never spent a poor day in his life.
But both, you know, Truman was an accident. He wasn't supposed to be president either.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think it's typical. I really don't think it's typical that you're going to find a young black kid raised by grandparents because parents were totally dysfunctional, raised poor, and I don't think that's typical either that they end up going to Harvard. So the president has been blessed all
Right. The grandparents, for one thing, he lived in the richest zip code in Hawaii.
Yeah.
His grandparents did.
Yeah.
They had political connections. He went to the most expensive private school.
Yeah, he was
private primary school in Ohio, in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And if you look at the genealogy of the people around his grandparents and into Chicago, Valerie Jarrett's parents.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you look at the genealogies there. He was chosen to move up through the ranks as a young man. I don't know if they ever thought he'd get to be president, but he was chosen. He was brought into that system.
His path is not typical of the average young black male in the United States. I will
concede that. The average young black male in the United States doesn't have a white mother or white grandparents.
Yeah, hang on one second. Hang on a second. We got cut. Oh, there you go, Beasley. What did you say? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I said hold
on. On the genealogy point you guys were just making, every president can be traced back within eight generations of some guy from London.
Yeah. Aren't Obama's people related to Dick Cheney? Aren't they some type of distant cousins?
Yeah, just about every president we've ever had has been related to this one particular. I forgot his name, but all of them. Come from this one guy.
There are bloodlines, but no. What I was telling Mike that Obama isn't your average black kid because your average black kid doesn't have a white mother and two white grandparents.
Correct.
He's biracial.
Yeah, I understand.
He's biracial and he's culturally white.
Don't tell him that.
Raised culturally white.
Don't tell him that.
Yeah, so I'm glad a black guy said
that. Believe me, he believes that.
Yeah, he pinned the black thing really well, but he's really as much white as he is black. But he pinned
thing. Only when it serves his purpose.
That's a politician. And you want to know something?
Yeah.
That's the advantage. That's one, the one advantage that you have. And if he looked whiter, he could play the game a little bit better.
Yeah.
But that's the one advantage that you have as being a mixed race person here in this society.
Yeah.
Is that you have the advantage, depending on how you look too, where you can play both sides of the fence or all sides of the fence. And I think you're entitled to do that because you grow up with some hardships.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
And it happens here in my office too, with me being blind. Like some of the people that work for me, they'll just say, you know, I'll say, here, take care of this, make this phone call, find out what's went wrong with this or whatever, and they'll come back and go, you're going to like the answer. I got it all taken care of. Oh, really? And of course, I had to pimp the blind thing to get it done. I go, oh, Jesus. So, you know, you take your perceived limitation, I guess, and turn it into a strong point when it suits your purpose.
Absolutely. That's called being resourceful.
It's called
being resourceful. I have no problems with it.
Yeah, I wonder on D-Day, if you had to do a demographic, how many of the short in stature GIs survived as a relative number to the ones that were tall and got shot first, and yet in our society being tall is perceived to be the plus.
Right. Hey, let me ask you guys a question just on a side note. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was talking about Beyonce's album or whatever. You know, I can't stand her.
Yeah.
So he was like, there's a song, Bow Down, you know, Bow Down, you know what. And she's saying, there's this guy on there, this female, sounds like a guy, pumping all these feminist ideological viewpoints when the predominant, you know, most of her listeners are black, females, 75% of them are single.
Mm-hmm.
She got her man, got her family. She's spewing out all this feminism rhetoric. And I just, what do you guys think about that? Because I think that's very hypocritical, and I think she's just kind of
they're entertainers. Let me finish
one statement. I think she's reading the times the way the wind's blowing, and she's going with it instead of being a real artist and coming out with just make good music. We don't need you to try to indoctrinate our little girls to hate marriage and hate family because that's the building block of the community. I don't like that. I can't stand it. That's why I don't like her.
There's nothing but hypocrites in the political and entertainment world. These people are out there, and they represent and promote causes and lifestyles that they don't necessarily lead, and their strings are being pulled by the people that finance them or the masters that they serve. So this
I think
not
they're
even
pushing black women to be real masculine and almost be combative with their men. And I just think that's sad. I really do. I have a problem with that. I think that
you know what? And I'm playing the devil's advocate, and I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with you. Another way to put that, someone can say that they're pushing black women to take control of their lives, be more assertive and be more assertive and take charge of their lives
I would agree with you, Brown, but it all depends on
how you want to look at it.
But even if you look at it like the way you're looking at it, what we're saying is we're not teaching our guys. We're teaching our guys to be controlled by their penises. Young men are controlled. Most of the men are controlled by their penis, right? And so they're teaching women to be controlled the same way. I don't think it's good for guys to be taught that way either. That's what I'm saying. Just because men are more sexually open doesn't necessarily mean it's better. I think that's the misconception, that because you're a guy, you have to be sexually promiscuous. You have to be controlled by your penis. You can't have any restraint, exercise any restraint, which, come on, strippers love people like that. But I think it's bad all the way around.
You know what's sad, taking a step back and listening to what you're saying, is that an entertainer has that much sway on young people's thoughts or people's thoughts and their behavior. And that's what's sad, that they would look for guidance, or that's where people are getting the message from on how to be from entertainers instead of their parents. So
you're right about that. Now I agree with you.
That's what's sad. And also, you have a you have a new a different phenomenon that really hasn't existed in previous generations, where you can have the 27-year-old parent and the 9-year or let's just say the 30-year-old parent and the 10-year-old child, they're listening to the same music.
Yeah. I just have a problem. I really kind of, I take note in stuff like this, and I look at it, and feminism has really taken root with a lot of these sisters out here, and I just feel like it's like the whole feminist movement pimp black women, don't really care about black women, but they were pimped and used to get certain rights, and now it's like, now they're just being made fools out of, if you ask me, because I don't think there's anything a black man can do that a black woman can't do. I think they can't name. I've never had one good woman say, "Well, as a black man, what benefits does a black male have over a black female?" If anything, black females get more jobs and opportunities than black men do.
Well, generally speaking, black females have spent more time in school. In 1991. I was going to the library. I remember we were going to the library a lot, and I was going with my brother. And it was the public library, and it's a big library, and we'd be going to the library, and I would notice, and I would tell my brother, I said, "You know what? Look at all the black girls I see here studying."
Hey, I'm not going to hit you back, bro. I'm going to hit y'all back. I'll call y'all back later.
Go ahead.
Okay.
We have our chat room is in there busy chatting amongst themselves and doing their thing. And we want to wish Alabama, one of our callers, well on his new endeavor. As he got a new endeavor for a new year, we actually wish him much success and Godspeed to you, my friend, and hope that you're very successful and turn into one of those millionaires.
Drop in whenever you can.
Yeah, drop in whenever you can. That's true. And we say hey to all our other callers as well. And look, we're talking about all of the different things that are going on in the government. We've never had a presidency this volatile that I can remember.
Well,
can I think
because
of?
Because we're not, you and I aren't old enough to remember the Wilson presidency.
Yeah,
this
Wilson
very,
would have been a radical.
This is very, very close to the Wilson presidency and to a large extent during the FDR presidency.
Mm, okay.
You guys don't remember Nixon? I do.
Oh,
you guys are a little
Nixon
older than
wasn't
me.
Radical.
You said volatile.
You said volatile.
It wasn't volatile either.
Getting
okay,
impeached.
Jeff.
And
Watergate
and all that. And,
wait a minute. Watergate period. Watergate period. That's
volatile.
What it was. It wasn't all that attached to Watergate. It was a break-in spying.
What it was a thoroughly corrupt, dishonest government that did everything dirty.
Yeah.
Where
the IRS against his political opponents. He did that. He took us off the gold standard. He did all kinds of things that we're paying the price for now. And on top of everything else, he goes and makes his drug czar a guy who 4 years later died from a drug overdose, Elvis Presley. That's not Iran.
Well, that's true.
Well, and not and
Nixon,
not, and
Nixon was far from perfect and far from honest, and I'll give you that. But
the things that
he did, as far as
go ahead, get it out.
Spying. Well, okay.
Be
yes,
careful.
What he did was evil and wrong and illegal, and he was part of his articles of impeachment were many of the same things that this president has done. Using the IRS against his political enemies was right there in the articles of impeachment,
uh-huh.
which this president has done.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, we can't prove that. I don't put it
past this president and looking into his political enemies and using the IRS. Well, go ahead, because you're right.
But the big difference I see between Nixon and President Obama is that he doesn't have he didn't seem to have the antagonism towards the little people. President Obama seems to have antagonism towards anyone, no matter how big or small, that is against him.
I can go further than that.
Go ahead.
Obama, in speeches and books and letters and you name it, everything that Obama was, everything that Obama represented before he became president,
right,
was completely and totally anti-American. It was not, and I don't mean anti-American as, you know, the way people go, oh, you can't call somebody anti-American. I mean that he railed against the Constitution. He called it a charter of negative liberties. He went against the American system of government as it was founded. He was completely, in his remarks, was anti-American. And so far from what I've seen after 5 years of a presidency, he's carried through with a lot of his agenda that he talked about. No other president has done that before.
Everything in his, you may be right, but everything except change and transparency.
Right. And again, why haven't they moved then to impeach him? If all of this is true, and the majority of the Americans agree with you on that point, why then isn't the Congress moving to impeach him?
And even more so, how come his advisors aren't being indicted and charged with crimes and being jailed? Because right around this time in Nixon's second administration is when everything started to fall apart. He was elected in 68, reelected in 72. He resigned August 9th, 1974, okay? Everything was hitting the fan in 72 and 73. And he held out, but Haldeman went to prison. Uh-huh. Ehrlichman, these are his two top aides, okay, his chief of staff, that have been with him for years, that have been with him for 25, 30 years. The number of people that went to prison and were charged with crimes, not to mention, remember the term, unindicted co-conspirators?
Uh-huh.
The criminality of that administration has been unmatched.
Yeah, and then when he tried to influence the special prosecutor, what's his name, resigned on the Saturday night
massacre. Leon Jaworski.
Yeah, when he went in and tried and he was dismissing all of those people.
They wouldn't fire the special prosecutor, and he finally got a guy that fired him.
Yeah,
and that guy eventually, Robert Bork, received a Supreme Court nomination, which he didn't pass, so he was rewarded.
Yeah.
For his standing, you know.
Yeah.
The reason why I think that, and I have, and if you go back and read on my blog, I've been saying for several years now that Barack Obama reminds me, look at past presidents, it's Richard Nixon. He's a liberal Richard Nixon. The reason why they haven't gone after him in the way that they went after Nixon is because he's still protected by the press.
This is true.
And the press won't let them. But it's my feeling. I had this discussion with my wife this morning when she asked me, why is Eric Holder still there? And I think that's a really interesting question because he knows where the bodies are buried. He knows, you know, you can't let anyone go into that spot because there's just too much. I could look at this and say, I'm looking at the similarities between him and Nixon, and I can go down a list. But when Nixon was elected, the press was against him. The press was against him through the first term of his presidency. The Vietnam War going on, and the press was anti-Vietnam War, and they couldn't blame Lyndon Johnson because they were Johnson supporters, so they went after Nixon got elected. And the press wanted him out, and the press got him out. Nixon was his own worst enemy, and I don't defend what he did because you don't do those things, just like you don't do the things that are happening right now. But the press likes this guy, so they've got the barricades up.
I'm pointing at my – go ahead.
The landslide victory over McGovern in 72 – I'm sure he had his detractors in the press, probably for good reason, but they didn't have that much influence on swaying the election to his side
no,
or against him.
That's true, but yeah, we're seeing a whole new element with Congress anymore. We're seeing I think Congress is more corrupt than it's ever been ever on state levels, on federal levels, and I think that on both sides of the aisle.
Money plays a bigger part in the electoral process, and it's always played a part, but now it plays a bigger part.
Well, I think it also plays a bigger part in some of these programs that are. I believe me, I think the whole of Congress is on the side of the ACA and Obamacare. I think they're for it, and I think that the Democrats, the only reason they would turn against Obama is to be able to you know vote in somebody else who will again benefit them in the long run. So I think Congress, more so in the Nixon years, is more corrupt, and that's the reason we're not seeing these movements towards impeachment.
I know, the thing about Nixon, and I'm going to say the same thing for Obama, because Nixon was an ideologue, and Obama is an ideologue. And these guys honestly believe that what they're doing is a good thing. They view it as, I know what's best, and I'm going to do it for the rest of the country because I truly believe, and I don't care what the ends always justify the means with these guys. And first of all, I'm not sure about the ends that Nixon had in mind. I'm not sure about the ends that Obama has in mind. But the means, both way across the board, are bad. Nobody has ever looked, and my feeling with Obama, if I'm going to pick out one thing that's his Achilles heel that nobody has looked at, that is his campaign finance when he ran his first presidential campaign. If you had an aggressive press, they would have gone in there to see how he raised all that money. And took a look at all those $5 donations that he said he got, because I'll tell you what, that's too many $5 donations. He didn't get that money the way they said he did. And I've run political campaigns. I've been involved in political campaigns. I know how to hide the money. I know how to hide where it's coming from. It's done all the time. I don't do it because I think it's dirty, but I've seen people do it, and I know what to look for. And nobody looked at who funded that campaign to the degree that they did. His story, we have all these small donations coming in and all these poor people from college are presenting in $5. I tell you what, no way.
That's a lie from the pit and they know it.
You have some fundraisers, you get somebody to put some cash in a pot, they distribute the cash, or they say, we're going to use your address, we're going to give you $10, we're going to say you donated $5. Anybody comes and asks, you donated the money. This guy is from Chicago. They're shrewd politicians. They're left-wing politicians, and they know all the angles. And nobody looked at it, and I wish they would. And I think what's going to happen, if he lasts, and I don't think he will, because it's going to take one person to bring him down, just one.
You don't think he's going to finish his term?
No. No, I don't. I don't think he'll finish the year.
I don't think that you're correct, but we'll see.
Is one person to connect them with what the Internal Revenue Service did, and he's out.
Well, I predicted him not finishing his term too. Except it was his first term that I predicted, so I was kind of wrong on that. But I think it's as I said. I still think it's going to be Democrats turning against him and getting him out of office before it is Republicans so that they can save face going into the next election.
I can't see it happening. I mean, not that I would not approve of it happening, but I just can't. I don't see it happening. He's so far proven to be Teflon. The way that those stories were coming out last year in 2013, one after another, the NSA, no one's even mentioned, we don't even mention the stuff they were doing with the press. They were tapping the AP's phones.
Yeah.
The Justice Department was tapping the phones of the press.
But that's the whole thing.
That's exactly my point. You know, the stuff is cumulative with him. You're not going to be able to point to one thing, but if you look at the overall setup right now he has no friends in the Senate. They're all running. And that's where a lot of, you know, you have the impeachment in the House and the thing in the Senate. I don't think it's going to come to that. I think that when they connect him with something that is patently illegal, he's out of there. I agree that he's yesterday's news. The left got their first African-American president, and they're all happy. Now they want a woman president. And they've got their money on Hillary Clinton, and I think that's a bad bet for any number of reasons. But nevertheless, that's all the Democratic Party has right now. There's nobody behind her that would be qualified to be president.
And you know what? If Hillary fails, they'll ditch her too, and then vote in Barney Frank as the first gay president. So.
I'm going to tell you guys
Hillary,
something.
You know what? I'll tell you what about Barney Frank. At least I know where that man stands.
Or bends over. You know what? I'm going to tell you what, guys. If Barack Obama, I don't want to see him get impeached.
It won't be good for the country. It's too much turmoil.
But I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. You think it's hard for a black man to get a job now?
You'll be fine.
Let Barack Obama get impeached. Every black man in America is going to suffer. They're going to be looking at Barack Obama every time they look at a black man to go hire him for just even for janitorial work. They're going to be like, nah, we're going to go with the Mexican. That's what they're going to say.
They do that now. You know what I see as something that's more plausible is the economy going into...
How long do you expect to work? A recent study by Northwest...
Go ahead.
I see, just like the end of the second Bush administration, that the economy just goes into a tailspin crash after things were covered up and you didn't know how bad it was, and in a matter of months you have a disaster, and I see that being orchestrated.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't either.
I see something like that, because that actually serves the powerful, super wealthy elite.
Well, yeah, I agree with you.
Is this boom bust? And one thing that we all can agree on, that whoever it is out there that's pulling the strings, that they're basically have the squeeze on all of us financially, where it hurts the most, and they want more control. And that's one way that they've done it.
Yeah,
and they'll do it again. They repeat the same type of thing. So I don't really see him getting impeached. He hasn't served his purpose yet.
No, I don't think he'll be impeached either. I don't think that's going to be what the scenario is. But at the end of the day, these folks have now discarded. They're throwing this guy away right now. Here's the problem. And during the campaign, this first campaign in 2008, one of the things that concerned me to watch what they were doing is when you put people up on a pedestal, like they put him up on a pedestal, to the point where no human being could possibly achieve and to behave the way they said he was going to. When those folks fall, they fall in a major way, more so than he was just like Joe Schmo coming in off the street, becoming president. Yeah, they look at stuff and they shrug, that's him, we knew that. They expected more from him. And this man looked at the camera and lied to the American public. That is a really tough nut to crack. It's a tough hurdle to get over. And I think, and if you kind of look within the Democratic Party, if you look who's talking right now, when you get on television, you see the far left people, his base, supporting him. But the moderates you don't see. You rarely see Joe Biden.
The far left,
you don't see Eric Holder
abandoned him. The far left has abandoned him. The far left has abandoned him long ago. They really have. I don't know anybody of my left-leaning friends or on the far left that supports this NSA stuff, the spying on the press. They call him Bush with a tan.
Because I've never heard that.
Bill Maher said it. You probably don't watch Bill Maher, but he's
no,
the
I
one
can't.
That
you know,
the
he,
phrase.
I have to take a pill when I watch him.
Yeah, I can't. Right. I can't take Bill Maher.
Yeah, well, that's every now and then he rails on Obama and the policy. So I don't think that the support's on the left. His support's more in the middle, and people that are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt that just really refuse to look at the bigger picture.
Right.
I
don't think he has any more middle. The people in the middle are the one who's bearing the brunt of this health care thing. The very people
that were
you're
the basic
about,
support
you're talking
of the
about the financial middle class. I'm talking about the ideological middle.
You know, if you look at his practical results with the, you know, the he talked about income redistribution and being for the middle class. You look at the practical result. We have more poor people and more rich people than we ever had before. And that's a fact.
And your middle class is melting away as we speak.
Melting away. I don't understand, you know, what support would be left for him there. I just think there's problems
again
ahead. And I don't want to see the country go through it. Don't get me wrong. I know politics, and Hillary Clinton is too close to him. That's their next horse, and they will do anything to protect her going into that election. And if they do it, they're going to have to do it now. They can't wait a year or two because then it gets too close to the election, which is why
she's already shown she knows how to lose an election or not even get the nomination when she has the war chest and all the support. She won't win. She won't win, and she probably won't get the nomination.
I predict we're going to see a reemergence of Joe the Plumber as a representative of the middle class average person's right-wing point of view. That whole thing was fabricated. The guy was – they purposely stood him up as the poster child for what the right was – you know, the right
– Joe the Plumber resonated with a lot of people, though. It was fabricated, but it was kind of brilliant.
But it fabricated, but the guy was inarticulate. He was a poor – he was put up to mock the right. He really was. And the right fell right for it. They embraced him. A guy who really didn't represent himself well, because then when he started getting the TV appearances and everything else, he totally fell down. He looked worse than Sarah Palin at that interview with Katie Couric. Okay, he was not articulate. He stepped all over his own tongue, and he just made their case. See how stupid the Tea Party people are? He was used. He was set up and used. And
he was the Trojan horse that the right brought in. Tea Party.
Yeah.
He was actually pre-Tea Party.
Yeah, but he had enough of a shadow that they dragged it right over to there. He was a Trojan horse that everybody on the right welcomed, and that because he had his 4.5 seconds of fame by asking the president a question, and they embraced him and took him into their camp, and then realized what an albatross he really turned out to be.
Who do you think is going to be I am hoping. Let me start. I'm gonna get my thought in gear over here the way I wanted to go. We talk a lot, we bash people a lot and complain a lot when we talk here, but my sense is that we need to start moving to the middle from both sides and look for some common ground and sit and get along with each other.
I think we should elect me.
Hey, listen.
Brown, you know what?
You know what?
I got to give it to you, Brown, that
I'm a pretty honest dude. I'm a pretty honest, reasonable dude.
I agree. I would vote for you as
more
president as long as Covina Man or Stanley was your vice president.
No.
Brown, I got to give it to you. You kind of intrigue me at times when you come to the center. Because it's thoughtful. If you're a liberal, you're not a liberal without sense, which I see.
I'm getting a little older and I'm changing, but I pride myself on taking a step back and looking at things and trying to figure it out.
Well,
and then seeing where I feel. I don't have to stick to anybody's ideology.
I'll tell you what I would like. I would like to see Elizabeth Warren versus Ted Cruz.
Oh, jeez.
Let's get this argument in the open. Let's get this argument
right out in the open, and
let's have that fight.
Alan Dershowitz said that Ted Cruz was the brightest of the bright of all of his students that he taught at Harvard Law School.
Right.
I don't see it. And maybe I have
to. Oh, I do.
Oh, yeah, he's brilliant.
He is brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
He's clerked at the Supreme Court. He's absolutely brilliant.
But didn't he also go on to say that as a politician, politically, he's a disappointment? He didn't live up to his potential? Wasn't that also part of that thing?
Well, he's a U.S. senator.
Obama. Okay, rest that argument.
Well, the thing
right,
is, the thing is, Mike, do we want a guy that understands the Constitution and can write good law, or do we want a guy that's a good politician?
You know the scary thing there, Styx, is that Obama knows the Constitution. Okay? He taught the Constitution at the University of Chicago. And part of the reason why a lot of people supported him is they felt that he would correct some of the abuses of the Bush administration with regards to the Constitution.
Well,
and
that's
he oversold.
Hang on. He was not a Constitution.
He spoke against
the
Patriot Act, course against
the war,
to talk
law.
One way and
Brown, hold on.
He taught only one course in constitutional law, and that was on the 14th Amendment, and he was all about reparation and everything else. So, no, that's not true to say he was a constitutional professor or expert. He focused mainly on the 14th Amendment. Yes, he taught one course. Go look up the history.
You're right. I've looked it up.
I looked it up
after I got challenged on it. You're right.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I specialize in giving boob jobs. That makes me a great doctor for women, right?
Here we go with the analogy. It's a good one, though, Mike.
Hey, you like that? Did I give you a good visual, Beasley? That's my job.
Did the black guy give you a visual? No, it did give me a visual. I saw operation
and
everything.
The president also taught Saul Alinsky.
Yes. That's what he taught the best. Saul Alinsky, his philosophy was that of Saul Alinsky, and he used Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radical, in his political science class or whatever it was, or even his 14th Amendment class. Here's the thing, though. This guy, you have no track record of anything. How in the world do you vote for that twice and you go for this? You know, well, I guess because they created a movie out of him.
Yeah.
They made him, you know, when he came on the scene, they said he's a blank piece of paper. We can make him whatever we want him to be.
Yeah.
Jeff, you're gonna find in the future that there are going to be more candidates just like him. And Ted
probably.
Cruz is the,
it's a proven
that,
formula.
Yeah, because look, these politicians are blowhards. They talk a lot. They're worse than me as far as talking a lot. And they're going to say things, and they're going to be on record. And you can go back 10, 15, 20 years, and they can get attacked. So that's not going to happen. Ted Cruz's real problem, he has a lot of support. Ted Cruz's real problem is that he was born in Canada to an American mother and a father who was Cuban, who was a Cuban national at the time.
He wasn't naturalized yet. His father wasn't when he was born. Was his father naturalized at that time or not?
No, they lived in Canada. His father's a Cuban citizen.
But were they just living
citizen.
In Canada?
He's going to have a hard time, especially the hard time they gave and are still giving Obama in some sectors about his birth certificate and his citizenship. Cruz is going to have a real hard time getting past that one. He may not
I'll
even
say
run
that,
because
that,
of that.
That helps him. I say that helps him because this man ain't showed you a true any kind of certificate, much less a birth certificate. So, you know, my thing is that part doesn't matter to me now, and it shouldn't matter there either, because guess what? This idiot has been in charge for these 5 years, and we're sitting back here now eating the fruits of his idiocy, okay, however you say it. Okay, this is crazy. No, his ideology is what he believes,
his idiocy.
Yeah, idiocy, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm here to help you out.
We love you, not so blind. You the seeing as blind man I ever did know.
Before we run out of time, I just want to readdress something we talked about a few days ago. So I'm going to let you finish this, but I do want to ask you something because my mind boggles. Remember we talked about it was upheld that blind people have the right to carry a concealed weapon, and then we were arguing about which state it was. Here's what I want to know. To what advantage would that be to a blind person? Because define the word concealment. It means that you have done something so that it's not in sight.
Right.
How would a blind person be able to determine that? It's kind of an ostrich existence. I don't see you, therefore you can't see me.
No, no. You'd have you'd do it like everybody else does. You if it was a gun, you could put it in the back of your pants. Nobody can see that. Or you could have it up under your arm in a shoulder holster.
You'd have to
you
be
know.
Coached on it. You'd have to be coached on it.
Well, no doubt about it. If it's a knife, you could do it up your sleeve, you know. Up your sleeve, you could have it. Number of different
people who aren't blind are coached on it. You know. When I got mine,
Wait, 724. Wait a minute, you guys. 724, wherever you just came in. Try to mute your phone because you're feeding us back.
Yeah, sorry, Jeff, I'm back.
Okay, hold on. Alex was saying something. Then you come in, Larry.
All right.
I was just saying that, you know, it doesn't matter if you're blind or not because I have my concealed carry permit and, you know, that I had to demonstrate that I could operate a firearm in front of the sheriff and take a class and so forth. So even as a as a good-sighted person, I still had to get some training. So, I mean, it's not unreasonable for a blind person to have a concealed carry permit and just be taught, you know, whatever provisions they need to protect themselves as well.
Yeah. I was just hung up on the concerns, the term concealed, because usually that means out of sight, and I was wondering how a blind person would be capable of determining that, that's all, without sighted assistance. You know?
I tend to lean towards Mike.
I'll say it like this. After getting a few citations, I think he'd learn how to do it.
Yeah, or find himself in rather unfortunate situations because the prospective criminal saw his weapon and snatched it from him, saying, I saw it there, and goes, darn, next time I'll have to find a different place to put it.
You have to pay off
how do you feel?
The future.
Hey, Mike, how do you feel about blind people having firearms in their own homes for self-protection?
Here's what I say. It's our right under the Constitution, and for the same reason gays have the rights they have, and disabled people have the rights they have also, we're all equal, and blind people are part of the community and part of the citizenry. As a practical matter, there's a lot of consideration that goes into it. Like Alex says, you know, there's a responsibility of to be properly trained and everything else. And in a home invasion that woke you up out of a sound sleep where you barely got your wits about you and your hearing's been compromised because of loud noises and you're really confused about what you're hearing, I personally would not want to pull a weapon out from under my pillow with family members in the house and start shooting at random sounds.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because there's been too many cases where sighted people have been opened up out of, and you're so disoriented, you know, and you don't know, and there's been these various transactions, wrong address, what they call those warrantless searches or whatever they do, you know, where they kick in your door in the middle of the night and stuff. I'm not sure, but I would never say anybody didn't have the right to defend themselves. Of course you do. And I've been giving this a lot of thought. As a matter of fact, I'm reaching out to other in the region around the country who specialize in teaching personal protection, and some of them are very high-up people that, have very high-profile industrial clients, people that tend to be kidnapped and stuff, and they have been giving me some good ideas on what even a blind person could do to protect themselves in their own home and in public. And I may write that all down someday and share it.
Have you heard of the Masada Youth Group?
I've heard of the Masada, but not the youth group. No, I haven't heard of that.
No. He's a gentleman. We've had him on the show several times. His name is Masad Ayoub, A-Y-O-O-B.
Oh, okay.
Look him up. He would be a really good resource for you.
Okay.
After you look him up, if he looks like that you want to get in touch with him, I can give you his email.
Yeah, would you please? You see my number there? Could you communicate with me on that and help me out?
Sure.
Hold on.
I appreciate it. Because now I remember Tracy had him on as a guest once, and I do remember asking a question, and I wasn't able to get his contact information on that show. So.
Yeah, we'll get that together.
Yeah, I'll get
Thank
that
you.
Number.
I appreciate it. I didn't mean to get you off track, Jeff. It's just that.
Oh, there you go. It's all good. No. This is your show today, man. We do what you guys
yeah,
want.
I missed you guys yesterday. Where were you?
Oh, we were here.
We were here.
We started
well,
late, but
no,
it was the day before.
Oh, okay. Because I checked up until like 1 o'clock on Blog Talk, and there was no. It said it wasn't scheduled. So.
Oh no! That wasn't.
Yeah, remember Jeff? We
I think the day before you guys
yeah.
missed a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
oh,
we
yeah.
were off Tuesday and Wednesday, but
on rebroadcast
because of Tracy being off, we dropped the ball on getting the episode scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
Ah,
so
okay.
We didn't make
yeah,
a call.
Hey, 724-624. We're getting ready to go to our last break of the day. I want you to come in unless you already have been in. And
I'll
come in. Yeah. Okay, Larry. Yeah. Right. As soon as we get off on the other side of this news, and we're afternoon with Tracy and Franz here on WSOM 600 AM. We're here talking to you about what you want to talk about today, and we'll be right back after this news break and a couple bill paying messages.
Yeah. Breezily.
Yeah.
On this subject of self-defense, like if I as a blind person could be guaranteed 100% when I pulled the trigger that
yeah.
really was my only alternative because I was down to the last second of a life or death decision, I would have no problem with that morally. My problem is since I wouldn't have any way of sizing up the situation, I wouldn't want to accidentally start firing on some, you know, 22-year-old kid who was confused and came home to the wrong door, or some kid who was just coming in to steal something and was unarmed and meant me no harm. He was hoping to get in and out without waking anybody up. I just don't think a laptop is worth a life.
I have a hard time with anybody pulling out a gun and shooting it, and I really have a problem with a blind person pulling out a gun and shooting it.
Hey, Mike, this is
well, then you probably won't loan me your car either when I'm in California.
No, but I'll ride you around anywhere you want to go.
Thank you.
And I got a nice car.
Thank you. I'm sure you do. You're enough of a capitalist or an entrepreneur that I'm sure you've earned that right.
Yeah.
So question, why not use a taser? Why not get yourself a taser so that
they get
you don't,
close, get some pepper spray.
Yeah.
So
you don't
kill someone.
The whole point of a
you
gun
know?
Is it gives
oh,
you the advantage.
A
taser's of
different. Yeah.
And but I mean, that way, you know, you don't, in case there is some error in your judgment, at
yeah.
least you don't kill him.
Well, you don't know. The guy's got a, what if he turns out you got a pacemaker and you shot him near his electrodes? He's done.
He shouldn't have been coming in there trying to steal your silverware.
That's true. But no, I've thought about this long and hard, and we have come up with some solutions. Based upon the typical home invasion and how it would occur, and we have come up with some solutions, and I would be able to incapacitate people and escape so that let law enforcement then size up the situation. You know what I mean? They'd be here waiting for them when they got here, but I wouldn't have to necessarily kill somebody to determine whether or not I should have killed somebody.
You know, if a home invasion robbery
mm-hmm.
isn't the scariest thing in the world.
I know.
You know, that people are that desperate and that bold
mm-hmm.
and that reckless
mm-hmm.
that they would come into someone's home while they're there
mm-hmm.
and expect to tie them up, kill them, or whatever to steal things,
mm-hmm.
it's beyond me.
Yeah, but the problem with that
yeah,
is with law enforcement kicking in 15,000 doors a year right now, and a large percentage, they're not even sure they're at the right address. If you're armed and you dare to try to defend yourself before you realize that it's a misguided law enforcement invasion, not a true
right.
criminal home invasion, you know, I mean, look what happened to that Marine that was shot 47 times in the middle of the night because he come out of
Friends,
the bed.
We are back. Talking to you on here on live on WSOM 600 AM and on your radio dial and on your iHeart radio dial as well and on Blog Talk Radio and at TracyandFriends.com. We're bringing up our chat room, and I'm going to bring up Larry. Go ahead, man. What you talking about out there, man?
Well, I'm still on my way back, Jeff, almost home, but I heard you talk about presidential material. I honestly believe that our next president has to come from the governor's ranks. And we have some good governors out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hey, Governor Baio, case in point. I mean, you know, he's got to win again here, but you know, all signs point to him being able to carry Ohio again. The guy was Newt gets all the credit for forcing Clinton to balance the budget and everything, but it was John Kasich that was behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done a hell of a job here in Ohio dealing with the headwinds from the feds and Obamacare that he's done, but he's done a heck of a job here. Light years better than Strickland, and I have to be honest, he's light years better than Taft at this point as well.
I agree with you on that, mostly as far as the management of the state goes. I think that John Kasich is doing a really good job, especially with the hand he was dealt. And I just think that there one thing that they did that I wish that I could have got them to take back was to include fire and police in that thing five.
Exclude them from that, yes.
Right. They should not have been involved. They shouldn't have been in that, situation there, because I think it would have passed otherwise, and I think we'd have been much more solvent right now and much better as a state if we had been able to control that.
Yeah, I think we'd be sitting where Wisconsin is right now with that.
Right.
I'm I'll get food when I say this, but I'm a Christie guy. I have always been a Christie guy, and I don't agree with his policies, a whole lot of his policies, but I think that he's looking at the year. Kasich has been a great governor. I like him a lot. I don't think he could beat Hillary.
I understand that.
But
what good does it do to beat Hillary if we end up with Hillary only looking like Christie? Look at his stance on gun control. Look at his stance on global warming.
They're
the same people. They're the same person. Only one's got longer hair.
But he's
and
not
a slimmer body.
He's not an ideologue. He's pragmatic. That's the number one thing I'm looking for in a candidate is he pragmatic?
I haven't seen any pragmatism come out of him. That's my
yeah,
fault.
You have.
That's my fault.
Yeah, you have.
Okay, well, tell me, Brown, what I saw.
Well, when the storm hit, he welcomed Obama and the help, no matter what people had to say that you're standing next
to
this man.
No, he French kissed Obama's behind.
In order to get something, that he did. He did that for his constituents.
Hey, Jeff,
It didn't work.
They got all kinds of FEMA aid. What scares me about Christie?
I'll let you finish, and then I'm gonna light that up. Okay, thank you.
All right, but what scares me about Christie is that he's part of the establishment that thinks that there should be spying on people. When Rand Paul spoke out, they had their little tete-a-tete, Christie was saying, just like Dianne Feinstein, he was saying that there needs to be some type, that it's ridiculous that they won't have spying. I wonder whose pocket he's in.
I think he represents something that's unconstitutional. Well, with the spying thing, I think he's looking through the same eyes as Peter King, because he's from New Jersey. It's a whole lot easier for those of us who are out here in the hinterlands to say it's more important to have personal privacy than it is to have security, than those people in New York and New Jersey that were actually there when it happened.
I don't accept that. There's the Constitution, and it's there for a reason.
Well, once again, Christie didn't just welcome Barack Obama and treat him as a king or whatever when he came. That wasn't all he did. He made over Barack Obama. He said he's going to cut the red tape and do that. And you know what? Guess what they did? They brought all those doggone FEMA trailers up there, and they set them down, and they wouldn't give out a single one. You know why? Excuse me. People couldn't live right by their little houses and build them over again because they were in a floodplain. And, of course, the EPA and is not going to let you set those FEMA trailers in a floodplain. So now, they did all of that. They put all the people in the hotel, and they kicked the people out of the hotel just here about 3 months ago because they still were not rebuilt. They still were not helped. And all of this in the midst when they killed Bush on not landing in Louisiana so that he didn't take any of the help personnel to have to protect him. Because the law goes that you must pull everybody to protect the president if he lands on the ground. So he didn't land, and they killed him in the press for it. Here it is, you got Christie, up here, just kissing this man's behind and not getting the help that he really thought really said he was going to get, and the red tape did not stop for him. He's just as much as a progressive as Barack Obama is. I don't have any use for him. Now, that's my opinion, you know. So I don't like him. And, you know, I liked him at first because he was a kick-your-butt type of guy. I'm not putting up with this. But then I looked at his policies, and his policies don't help. That's my problem.
I am totally against federal aid stepping in for anybody who lives on the seacoast and didn't have their home insured and loses it because of a natural disaster, especially because – why should some poor son of a gun in Ohio killing himself to make ends meet, pay taxes, to bail out somebody who lives on a luxury piece of property that during good times, they'd shoot you if you went on the property to try to use their beach? If it's private land, it's private land.
Well, hey, Mike, I just heard something today. In the nominal floodplains of the Ohio Valley,
yeah,
the federal flood insurance rates have tripled to cover what they spent for the coasts.
Exactly. If you can't afford the insurance or you can't afford to underwrite yourself if you own $1 million piece of property on the beach, then maybe you shouldn't own it. That's as ridiculous
as
some poor guy driving a Cadillac and wants you to pay his car insurance.
I don't think that was what happened here. And so I don't buy that because guess what? There, by the grace of God, go any of us because we could have any type of natural
– I'm not talking about giving them food and shelter. No, I'm not talking about the humanitarian side.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I said, there for the grace of God, go. We're not rebuilding their houses, but we could have given them trailers to live in while they did rebuild their houses because the infrastructure of that seacoast town was wiped out, just like New Orleans. See, everybody's talking about Obama helped this disaster, that disaster, but nothing compares to what happened down in Louisiana.
Right.
Okay, you had an infrastructure wiped out, wiped clean, and you didn't have any roads, you didn't have anything to really work with, and much of that happened right on the very coast, and inland you had other types of damages. I'm not against myself. I'm not against that. You know, I'm okay. I'm okay with taking some of my money and helping somebody in a disaster. They could die in that disaster, especially after it snowed 2 days later. So we're looking at this situation. But here the problem is you have all this government red tape that's always in the way of the of getting people help. Stop it. Who cares whether it's in a floodplain? What's the good of having the things up there? You transported them. How stupid is that? How stupid is it to have these people still living in hotels?
Again, it's just
that's the one that gets me.
It's another case of where you get centralized government stepping into what really is a local problem.
Right.
Give them the money and let them do it themselves. Because the guy on the street, the guy two blocks over, knows what's going on in his neighborhood better than some bureaucrat in Washington.
And you ended up with Sandy. You ended up, it's my understanding, with insurance companies fighting with federal flood insurance.
Yeah.
The insurance companies were saying that it was floods, and the flood insurance was saying no, it was from the roofs getting ripped off, and you know, at some point when you've got a catastrophe like that, the two parties, the two insurance parties, got to get together and say, listen, we're just going to split the losses and shut up.
Exactly. They chose to both underwrite, co-risk it when there's a catastrophe. They co-underwrite it then.
Right.
And that would be a simple change in the law, and then that's the way it is. And every company then doing business in that area knows it's a co-underwritten law, and it's like no default, no fault divorce, you know? It's a 50-50
yeah.
deal.
Well,
be better for the homeowner.
Yeah, it would be better for the consumer in general, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but,
and it would be better
for
the cities, because then they wouldn't be living with high-risk now public health issues from these demolished buildings that are unsafe for people to go in and out of and stuff, because the money wasn't there to properly raise the structure and clear the lands and everything and fill in the open pits. And, you know, you got school children, you got rats, you got all kinds of stuff that you're, you know, you got rats
right.
that you're dealing with, you got school children who are naturally curious. I know we used to hang around in derelict buildings when I was a kid,
sure.
thought it was really cool. So.
Yeah, I mean, you've still got tons of New Orleans that are in the same problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people still living outside the state because they can't come back. And they are not building that city back anywhere near with the same people owning it as before. It's super expensive.
Yeah.
And so, hey, we will see how this goes and see what happens. But we're looking at a lot of exciting things happening this year. We're going to be able to get on it a little earlier in the morning. So right after your morning news and all that stuff, we'll be coming on here on this coming Monday at 9 a.m. in the morning.
Coffee and donuts with Tracy.
That's right.
We
Tracy
used to be
is
morning
your third
coffee.
Cup of coffee from now on.
Yep. Right?
Not your lunch anymore. She's your third cup of coffee.
That's right. That's right. And we'll wake you up for real.
You know what I find interesting going back to the elections? Nobody really has a clue you got a clue on the Democratic side, but you don't know how successful she's going to be and how people are going to respond to her. But you really don't have a clue who's going to be the pick or who are going to be the people running on the Republican side. It's all up in the air.
Yeah,
it is, and the press is making it be Christie, and because they want two progressives again. And I'm sorry, I apologize to my great friend here, Mark, because he's a Christie man. But I just see it. They're going to do the same thing. They had Romney and Obama, which are the two of the same people. That's one is half white and one was all white. both progressive.
That's what I'm saying. It's time for Elizabeth Warren versus Ted Cruz, or Mike Lee, or
I like Cruz.
Rand Paul. I mean,
Rand Paul.
Let's have the libertarian versus the progressive fight and see who wins.
Well, we'll see, because they're going to have to get down to it. That's for sure. And we're coming down to where the rubber hits the road. This is midterms, and this is going to be exciting. I think that,
what about Jeb Bush?
No.
Well, that's not
going
to happen.
I ain't going to say it ain't going to happen, but
here's the only thing I ever agreed with Jesse Jackson about. Stay out the bushes.
Yeah.
Well,
if you want to lose election, here's the rule. Here's the formula to lose election.
Well, Jeb Bush would win the election if he won.
Right.
If he runs.
Yeah. Change your last name to Bush and then run for something. It'll
no, well, not me, but you have to understand. You have to understand who he is. And once again, we can't get into that now, but we'll get into it next year or next week, I should say. And then we'll get into all these things because our time is running down and we can't stay here any longer. You don't have to go home, but you got to get off our show today. So
9 o'clock Monday morning.
Yep. 9 o'clock Monday morning, we moving.
And starting Monday, I think Tracy's going to give you guys in the chat room an extra 30 minutes after we're done.
Right.
Oh, great.
Right, to talk, yeah. So we'll see what happens. Have a good one, everybody. God bless. See you next week, 9 o'clock a.m.
You've been listening to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends. Listen to Tracy every weekday from noon to 3 on Newstalk 600. Visit our website for more about Tracy and Friends at www.tracyandfriends.com.
Hello. You there, Beasley?
What?
Are you still there? Hello. Did they cut us off?